Thank God that, you know, the numbers of infection, the number of infections is going down, and that the country has found a vaccine that is being rolled out. Other countries have started rolling it out, and South Africa is also on course to roll out its own vaccine program. And of course, with the first delivery taking place as from was it from the 1st of February. And so we are assured that very soon the country will get on top of this pandemic that has caused havoc, disrupted you know, in livelihood, you know, caused havoc in the economy, and basically put all our plans in disarray. It's even worse that the problems, you know, will carry. I mean, they will carry through with the impact that this has had on the budget of the country. In other words, we will continue to feel the impact of this pandemic going forward. The country was at the beginning of last year projected to raise 1.5 trillion rand, but then we knew that the expenditure was 1.9. So it means that already we were projecting to have a deficit of about 400 billion rand as a country. That is 2021 financial year. And that was everything going well. Then this pandemic came, disrupted the economy, which meant less, you know, revenue for the country. What made it even worse was that we had to take out 500 billion rand from this 1.5 billion, 1.4 billion rand that was projected address you know this pandemic. So that is the situation as last. In other words, once we had this deficit of 400 billion rand, we also had to take money that was unplanned for 500 billion rand, and you know, in out of the plans to combat the virus, as it were. So we are starting now, very soon, starting a new year, 21-22. And I've not been briefed of the economic outlook as yet, but it is still very bleak. I don't see the projections, you know, coming any closer to what we were projecting to raise as a revenue in the last financial year. I think this year will be worse. And so that's a situation that the country is facing. And this situation is not likely to improve, in my view, within the next 2-3 years. In other words, the period, the whole MTF period would be paying for the problems you know, that it came with this pandemic. So that's the situation that we are at. Colleagues, Brian says we are correct. And let me just do some acknowledgements. I'm told Brian tells me that the department is here, is represented by, let me start with the apology of the minister. The minister is attending an AU meeting that is taking place at the same time as this meeting. So we accept that apology. And I was informed that the deputy minister would be in the meeting. And the SecDef is in the meeting. Vice Admiral Kubu, C Human Resources, CHR, is in the meeting. And I was also informed that the CFO will be in the meeting. The Chief Director of Finance and Brigadier Kevin Richards, Human Resources. Chief Director of Finance is Mr. Idem Abunsi. And of course, we have the support team, Zamini, Sipiwe Zamini, Head of Communication, and Mr. Ngabinde, PLO, and Mr. Reginald Marimi, PLO, DOD. And the other one, government is PLO and ministry. So that's the representation that I have been made aware of from the side of the department. And Brian, are there any other apologies that you have been made aware of?
Chair, we don't have any other apologies.
Not any other apologies. And let me just check with the SecDef if I'm correct in the delegations that have just announced. SecDef, welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Yes, you are correct, but we are also going to be joined by General Dabula, and we also have Dr. Misi that come from our staff.
Well, thank you so much. It's Surgeon General Dabula and Wells.
We need her.
No, you shouldn't.
Chairperson, I can't hear you. I don't know. But
yes, is that Surgeon General Dabula and Wells?
And Dr. Zamini.
All right.
Sorry, Dr. Mnisi. It's General Surgeon General Dabula. And then we have Dr. Mnisi, and then from the chief's office, we have General Ramanswala.
Okay, no, sure. No, thank you so much. Welcome to the meeting, SecDef and the team, and a special welcome to the DM. DM, have you already joined the meeting? Deputy Minister? All right. It doesn't look like he's already logged in. Fine. We acknowledge him in his absentia. Right. Having said that, let us look at the items, colleagues. The agenda is as it is presented. Do you have any objection with the agenda? The reason I'm raising this is because we are yet to adopt the program for our first term. So we'll do it in this meeting today. And let's look at the items, colleagues, so that I'm sure we are together before I start the meeting. Brian, can you flash the program on your side? Sorry, the agenda for the meeting. Brian, can you hear me? Brian? Okay.
It is flighted. Can you see it?
Yes, I can, Buti. Thank you so much. Colleagues, this is the agenda for the meeting. I seek your concurrence, and the matters are as they are stated on the agenda, and we The first item is the consideration and adoption of the 2021 first term agenda. I don't mind bringing that one down to the last to be the last item of the day, and start with the other issues, colleagues. If you agree with me, do I get your support?
Yes,
in other words, Chair, to bring down point three to say seven, to bring it down. Yeah. Okay. No problem.
Just the change I'm introduced. Thank you so much. I got
just from my side. While I accept it because of agenda is your prerogative as Chair. And maybe that's why I'm glad that we moved the consideration of the first program, of first term program, to the last, because I know that you know that I have not only yesterday, but I think it was last week that I've communicated with you whether we will consider the whole so-called Cuban COVID-19 medicine fiasco. But it seems like we only get a limited briefing by the AG and basically no response from the DOD on that. So although that is not on the program, at least, you know, we have got the interaction with the AG, and then there will be suggestions from my side in terms of how we should incorporate that in the first term program. Thank you very much.
Correct. I'm happy with that approach because I think it assists us when we develop a way forward arising from the issues that will emanate from the presentation going forward. I think moving it down assists us when we have to incorporate new items arising from the meeting today. All right, colleagues, thank you so much with that. And without much ado, let's move then to item number four. But before the item number four, may I ask Willem, Dr. Willem Jansen van Rensburg, just to, there's a two-pager, a two-page document we have prepared, which is just a recap of the issues that we are about to deal with today, and so that there is a link between what the department is going to present to the issues that we have dealt with in the past. Just for your indulgence, it's about a 2-3 paragraph presentation. Over to you, Willem.
Thank you, Chair. Is the slide visible on your side?
Yes, it is.
All right, Chair. Thank you. I'll just go through it. It's a very quick one. This was a short research paper that was prepared for members, in addition to another research paper, both dealing with the issue of compensation of employees, which has been on the radar of the committee over the last few months at least. What this paper does, it simply looks at two recent meetings and today's meeting. So on the 26th of August last year, the committee met with National Treasury to discuss compensation of employees. On the same day, the DOD also provided a presentation. And what I did just for members to have a broad view and a recap of these things is to compare those to some of the input that emerged from the presentation that will be made today, of which the DOD can obviously clarify more precisely. So this short table of comparison was made to be read in conjunction with the other research paper. The other research paper focused more on the issues that emerged from the symposium that the committee had with academics and external experts regarding compensation of employees. So if we go down to the next page of this, On the left-hand column, you'll see there was the National Treasury meeting of 26 August, the middle column of the DOD's input on the same day, and the third column was the DOD's presentation prepared for today. The first key issue that National Treasury raised was that there is no space for additional funding from the fiscus given constrained fiscal, the constrained fiscal environment and the need to contain the public wage bill. That was the input from National Treasury. On the same day, the DoD said that the human resources component will eventually consume all resources required by the DoD to execute its mandate. This is largely due to consistent budget cuts and the capping of the COE ceiling below the existing strength, which is the human resources strength of the department, to source additional funding from the operating portion of the budget. It would seem from the presentation that was provided by the department for today's meetings, where they state that the trajectory of underfunding the compensation of employees' budgets will continue and even increase in propensity as the economic outlook of the country declines. So this seems to be a continuation of the trend, which is concerning and requires the committee's attention. Members, what I try to do in this table as well is just to put relevant aspects together so it is not in order as presented in the DoD's presentation. The second issue raised by the National Treasury last year was that the DoD will incur irregular expenditure in 2020-21 unless it deals with compensation of employees' pressures. And indeed, if we go to the presentation prepared for today, the department says that the adjusted compensation of employees shortfall will be $1.97 billion. This might be the wrong figure because I think an updated presentation was sent yesterday where the figure is in fact $2.8 billion. But the department could perhaps provide clarity on the exact amount, what the shortfall is for this financial year. Thirdly, National Treasury also said in its current form, the DoD rejuvenation strategy will not resolve compensation of employees' challenges effectively. There was also some input on that day around the rejuvenation strategy, which has changed for the SANF, but perhaps more importantly to look at today's input around the rejuvenation strategy. And it seems that there are plans to reactivate exit strategies, specifically MEM, the Mobility Exit Mechanism, and employee-initiated severance packages. But importantly, I think the department states in their presentation that this would require additional funding in order to meet the financial liability for exit strategies. Obviously, these strategies, as important as they are, they come with cost, and it is important for the department to indicate perhaps whether there was there will be funds available or whether the National Treasury has made funds available. Just as a side note, Chair, and members, you may recall that in the previous BRRR, this question was posed by the committee to National Treasury. The committee asked National Treasury to indicate whether there's additional funds available for exit strategies. There's been no response yet to this BRRR, and as far as I know, the responses from the Minister of Finance will come with the budget to be presented in this month. The next point that National Treasury raised on that day in August 2020 was that the Defence has discretion on the utilisation of reserves, implementation of natural attrition, and MSDS intakes. And they said that these mechanisms should be considered to deal with compensation of employees. And if we move to the presentation of today, it seems like there is an indication from the department that they've taken this to heart, given the plans that they alluded to. For example, these planned interventions include force strength reduction, reduced reserve force utilization, the loss replacement according to critical requirements, alternate calendar year intakes for MSDS, where they will only have an intake every 2 years, if I understood the presentation correctly, and the capping of payment on discretionary allowances. Next, the National Treasury also indicated that the proposal to transfer DoD members to other departments requires the DoD to consult other departments. This was one of the sort of rejuvenation aspects that National Treasury touched on that day. There was no input from the DoD in August 2020, and it does not seem like this is proposed in the presentation we received for today, so perhaps that's something that can be followed up on. Second glance, the current force design, National Treasury said that the current force design and structure of the SNF is unsustainable, and this leads to significant funding requirements for compensation of employees whilst eroding the DoD's capital and operating budget. The DoD sort of echoed this, saying that the DoD may be unable to provide value against its funding from the fiscus, as all other elements of the posted fit will be negatively affected. And that speaks to the broader force structure and design, and the size of the compensation of employees' funding required for the DoD. Lastly, and this is perhaps something to look at again, National Treasury indicated last year that there will be further engagement between Defense, National Treasury, DPSA, on the rejuvenation strategy and to map the way forward. But the presentation we received from the DoD for today states that today all attempts by the DoD to seek relief have come to naught, even when it has demonstrated its resolve to maintain the current workforce levels, to meet with constitutional obligations, to prepare, plan, and conduct military operations. And, Chair and members, perhaps this last point echoes the sentiment that was found by the committee last year, that there seems to be a disjuncture between National Treasury and the DoD on the way forward regarding compensation of employees and rejuvenation of the defense force structure. Thank you, Chair. That's all from my side.
Thank you so much, Willem, for this summary. And I made a mistake at the beginning. I should have acknowledged the Office of the Auditor General. I don't know who is here and representing the office. May I get to that, Brian, who's representing the Office of the Auditor General?
Chair, we do have Ms. Tottet amongst
You are breaking. I'm not too sure it is me who has the problem this side. Brian?
Chair, no, we hear you very well, so it seems like it's on Brian's side, but I've seen the name of Lawrence, our ordinary AG liaison person, so our auditor. So.
Okay. Mr. Lawrence? Can I check with you? Are you already in the meeting?
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. I'm already in the meeting, and I'm also assisted today by two colleagues from our performance audit section, Mr. Kivesh Lachman, he's the business executive there, and also Krishna Janssen van Rensburg, who was very close to the special audit. And then, as indicated, Mbali, as always, is with us. And then also Soli Gianni. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. I welcome the AG team that you lead today. Thank you so much. Right, colleagues, we've now done a recap. Just to say the issues are not new. And we are happy that the department is responding to these issues. But let me just grant the opportunity to the SECDEF to take us through in detail. And SECDEF, welcome to you once again. Thank you so much. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me take this opportunity to wish the honourable members a good 2021, and I hope that we'll continue our work with a high spirit. Chairperson, thank you very much. As you would recall, last year towards the end of the year, the Parliament was about to rise, we gave a commitment to the portfolio committee.
Colleagues, the SECDEF is breaking.
Okay.
SECDEF, just can hold. Is this okay. Interruption from this side only, colleagues, or you also experience the same problem?
No, sir. It's very clear for me. Mine is very clear.
It's very clear.
Mine also.
I Yours also. Then, okay, let me improve my setup, this site. Okay, sorry for this, SecDef. You may continue. Thank you so much.
No, Chairperson, I was just saying that we had made a commitment to the portfolio committee that as we resume the new year, we'll revert back to the portfolio committee on our HR plan. And indeed, at the moment when we parted ways, we started work in earnest. And I think what we did, it afforded us an opportunity to consult with them. I think we will still acknowledge that we need to do further consultation. However, Chairperson, whatever we are going to be presenting to the honourable members and yourselves today is a hybrid model. We've looked at all the issues that I think Mr. Willem van Rensburg has touched on when he was introducing the subject. So, Chairperson, at this point in time, we have about 72,996 people confirmed in the post-establishment. So at least because then there is also that acknowledgement that as and when the people we are lost through natural attrition, maybe we should look at not refilling the post and allow for rejuvenation from the bottom using an MSDS. Chairperson, as I was saying, this is progress report that we want to give to you. Progress in the sense that we still think that we need to interact with our colleagues from National Treasury. I know that before my time, there were engagements around the issues of the MEM and the EISP. And I think with what we have done, we think that we need to go back to Treasury to have those discussions. But we will also, because of the civilian component of the department, we will need to also engage with our colleagues from the Department of Public Service and Administration. One of the things, Chair, you would see, which is not in the presentation, is that we are now starting a process where we say, with the options that we are proposing before you, we need to start isolating what are the possible risks associated with that. So that then with those risks, we will then work out the mitigating measures so that then as we unfold, the plan unfolds, then we feel that we have looked at all those. Of course, with the plan that we'll present to you, Chairperson, it also means we have to go to the back to the drawing board to relook at our targets. And I hope that the presentation will cover most of the areas that we'll look at. But what we also do, Chairperson, is that with the various options that we are proposing, we also show how much savings we will make. And then we are hoping that in a few years' time, we'll be able to overcome the problem and maybe we'll go back to what was initially envisioned in the defense review of 2015, the 40-30-30 split. Because at this point in time, at the COE level, we are around 60%. So something is bound to suffer between the acquisition and the issues of operations. So Chairperson, I've got with me, supporting on the matter, Admiral Kubu, and I'll invite him to do the presentation. We will load the presentation from our site, Chairperson, if that is fine.
Yes, thank you so much. Please do load it on the site. Vice Admiral Kubu, our Chief HR, the platform is yours. Thanks. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you. Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Thanks for the introduction. And my own role, just want to make sure.
Yes, you are, and we can see your presentation as well. Yes, you are audible, Admiral Kubu.
Thank you, Chair. Sekdef has already introduced the topic and she touched on few other issues that I was going
to... Chairperson, he's hardly... I cannot hear him. It seems like his microphone is not properly close to him.
You see, you then... your voice started going down just immediately after I acknowledged that we could hear you. Can you speak up a bit? Maybe there's something that has interrupted the mic. Right?
Am I better now?
No, you're too soft. You were much clearer earlier on. I've tried to raise the volume.
No, sir. Chairperson, we have got exactly the same problem that you have got.
Yeah.
It seems like, and I'm not a tech expert, but it might be something that the Admiral is using, either earphones or something like that. I've had that experience in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So you must just look at that, the technology that is using or assistance.
Please do that.
We tried to start out the technology.
Maybe start with this.
Better now.
Maybe to start, I can see two. Can you just correct your slide, you know, presentation first? Just have one slide on the thing, and so that you don't have two. Maybe that two would interfere with the sound. Just one slide, make it one. Just eliminate those too many slides on the left.
Slide two.
Yes, you press that. Oh, it takes you to this. And is there a way you can correct that?
One of those screens at the bottom. No, this is not.
Is it better now?
Yeah. Well, look, it's. I'm not too sure. Okay, can you eliminate those too many slides on the left? Just go to the. But it takes us to where we were. I don't know how you can deal with it. Can you do it again? Just press that yes. Just check if it will still take us back to where we were. That verse. All right. Now it looks better. It looks better. Can you enlarge it? Is it possible to make it full on the screen? All right. Can you talk so that we check if the sound has improved?
Can you hear me? Am I audible to now?
I know it's slightly better now. Just go ahead. Let's see how it goes.
Thank you, Chair. Members of the Portfolio Committee of Defense, thanks for the opportunity. We are going to present the possible interventions to reduce our COE as per the previous discussion that we had with yourselves. I just want to mention that this was a difficult exercise from all of us. As we all are aware that you know, the DoD has always been on the same position to saying we are actually better at 75,500, and any reduction thereof will probably create some challenges for us. We did discuss few issues in terms of the security implications and security threat that we are facing as a country, and then those are the issues that we always felt that this is probably not the way to go in terms of, you know, even laying off the people and put them on the street. But what we're discussing today, at least we not longer in the position to say we are going now to lay off people, because we are close to what we are going to be presenting to yourselves. Also, just to highlight that in terms of our post-establishment, the active posts that we are having in the DoD are approximately 89,600. That actually talks to, if we look at the 75,500 that we have been talking about, we were actually already confirming that our staffing level will be at 84%. So we never intended to staff our posts at 100%, taking into consideration the constraint that we are facing. But the model that we are going to be presenting also talks about a further reduction of the personnel strength in the DoD, and that will also probably give us close to 82% of the staffing. I just felt that I must actually just start with that before we continue with the presentation. Also, just to confirm...
Chairperson, sorry, Admiral, can I suggest that you, on that screen of yours, right-click the mouse, and then you will see there's an inscription, Hide Presenter View. Right-click, and then go down to Hide Presenter View. And then you will see that that takes away this the screen that you've got, and it's a proper presentation then. Because this is right-click on your mouse. You must have some tech people there. And then go down to Hide Presenter View.
The IT people are working on it. Yes.
Just on a mouse.
You use a trigger finger.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
What is a trigger finger, Stalo? What is a trigger finger? He knows.
So thanks a lot, Jim. What we wanted to say is that, and this is what I said to the...
You still have not resolved the problem. You still have two slides going at the same time.
Yeah. Just right-click, go down to Hide Presenter View. Someone is moving the cursor there, and it seems like that person is not right-clicking, because if you right-click on your mouse, you will see there is it, Hide. Go up, there is it, right, click it. There is it. Thank you very much.
So you needed the thumb, not the trigger finger. Okay, yeah, it's visible now. Yeah, it's okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
What I just wanted to emphasize before I actually introduce the whole presentation was that we also accepted at the Council of Defense that there won't be an easy solution to this problem. And any intervention that we are going to be putting in place will anyway have implications or risk to the DoD. But we're not going to bore the portfolio committee on that particular matter. We will be reappreciated in-house. My intention is to brief yourselves on the initiatives to reduce the HR cost pressures for the MTF 2021. We are going to look at the proposed measures to reduce compensation of employees as per our previous discussion that we held with the South Treasury as well. In terms of the background, we'll look at few issues and I will look at the scenario, summary of the COE budget. We'll look at the department HR position, the planned intervention and summary of potential savings, and we will conclude and engage. So we have accepted that we had a number of deliberations with yourselves on the dilemma in terms of HR funding. We have always been resolute, and we are still resolute as the DoD to assure a workforce that is able to plan, prepare, and conduct military operations. Notwithstanding our position, we have also accepted we have to give consideration to reduce HR cost pressures on our allocation. This will also allow us to also be able to provide, some savings so that we can also be able to make sure that all our capacities are also being looked after in the DoD, because we also have got challenges in terms of our budget to fund all our capabilities and capacities.
We also accept that it is unlikely that we will receive additional funding to cover the shortfall in terms of compensation of employees. That's why we're coming with these interventions. In terms of the scenarios that we want to present to yourself, we're confirming that the trajectory of underfunding the compensation of employees budget will continue and even increase in propensity as the economic outlook of the RSA declines and greater emphasis will always be placed on headcount reduction to save on all HR costs. And it's not only the DOD, and we have also know all the other departments are facing the same challenge as well. We also tried to seek for relief through National Treasury, and we also presented to yourself to request if there is a possibility for your active engagement and resolve of this particular issue, but the positions have been very clear, and then we understand why the position was clear from your side and from Treasury as well, because of the challenges the country is facing in terms of the, you know, the fiscal. We also expect that this problem will continue and there will not be any relief soon. In terms of the summary of the budget for the 2020-21 MTEF, I just want to highlight the following. If we look at 2020-21, and then that goes to what the doctor just said initially, where we said 1.97 and that was the 2.8. The 1.7 speaks to the financial year, sorry, 1.9 talks to the financial year that's just going to end now. It's not talking to the 2.8 that I will be discussing later on, which is the one that talks about the new financial year. So I just want to confirm that the 1.7 is talked for this particular financial year. We're confirming that it is unlikely that the department will receive additional funding from the fiscus, given the economic outlook, as what we said. I just want to highlight, if we look at the forthcoming financial years, in the MTEF that is starting in April now, you'll see that we, in terms of our allocation, we have got 29 billion that was allocated to us. We require 33.7 billion. Our shortfall that we're forecasting will be at 4.3 billion. That's the shortfall for the 2021-2022. In terms of 2022-23, the allocation still remains at 29 billion. We require 34 billion and our shortfall will be at 4.6 billion. The subsequent year of 2023-24, we have been allocated 29.6 billion. The requirement from our side is 34.3 billion and our shortfall will be 4.6 billion. And the last year, 2024-25, the allocation also has been confirmed at 29.6. We require 34.2 and our shortfall will be 4.5. We can see with these four forthcoming years that there's deficit of just over 4 billion per subsequent year. And this will continue. And we don't foresee that we will get any money from Treasury, irrespective of, you know, how much interaction we are going to be having with them. The one that I just confirmed earlier on was this one of 2021, where we said it was not 1.9. So, and then we also want to flag and say, although we're saying 1.9, we have not included the improvement of conditions of service, which is 3.8% that we're expecting that we will be paying. And this 3.8% amount to just over a billion, 1.1 billion. So if there is a decision that is going to be made to pay the improvement of conditions of service of our members, then the 1.9 that I just discussed we will have to add 1.1, and it will just give us over the 3 billion shortfall in terms of HR for this particular financial year that's ending now in March. What does it mean now going forward based on the interventions that we want to propose to yourselves as the Honorable House? We want to confirm that we have met with the COD last week and this past Thursday, and we are now going to present our new position going forward. Obviously, that's talking from 1 April 2021. We have as HR proposed that we relook at the 75,500 of our average strength, and we amend it to 73,000, which is our current position. And the COD has given a positive note on that particular proposal or intervention to say maybe for now this is the way to go. We also have looked at the reserve force utilization, at which we always maintain 2.6. We say we are going to be reducing by 700,000 mandates, and we will be doing, obviously, changing our reserve force mandates to 1.9 million, which will also provide some funding that I will extra cost-saving costs that I will be discussing in the subsequent slide. We also looked at how we're going to be replacing the loss of our personnel, and we said in terms of the previous position, we always said we are going to be reducing and replacing people according to attrition. Now what we say, we are saying now it's not going to be possible anymore to reduce according to attrition. We will obviously have to look at, you know, other critical requirements and replace people according to critical requirements instead of just a normal attrition, because attrition means that we're going to have to stick to the number of people that are exiting and replace them accordingly. But for now, we're saying look at the critical requirements only so that the figures can still reduce so that we really deal with this issue of compensation of employees decisively. In terms of the planned intervention, we also saying we have to downsize the departmental strength, and then I did confirm that we said 73,000. We will recruit selectively, mainly in the combat mastering, and we will fit from the bottom to rejuvenate the force. In terms of the FSDS intakes, we confirming that this year we did not have the MSDS intake, and our decision or intervention that we have put in place is that we are going to alternate the intakes. In 2022, we will have an intake, and we will have another intake in 2024. So 2023, we will not have an intake. So in these 3 years, 4 years, we will only have two intakes. And this will give us a saving of approximately 195 million annually. For those years that we're not going to have intakes. The reserve force intake that I've already discussed that we will be reducing, we're looking at the potential savings of 500 million for the 700,000 mandates that we are not going to actually utilize as per the previous HR plan. And if we look at it, we will actually be reducing the forecasted expenditure by at least, if we look at it, around 2 billion that we're looking in terms of the forecasted expenditure that would be stabilizing going forward. We also want to talk about the capping of discretionary allowances. Discretionary allowances are those allowances that we are not forced to pay, but which are actually very critical for us to pay in terms of retention of personnel. And those are the regimental allowances, operational allowances, allowances paid in lieu of scarce steel, mostly the OSDs, and we say kept. When we say we're keeping, we say if there are general increments coming, we're not going to increase those allowances. We only do general adjustments, but the allowances remain as they are. The previous model that we wanted to bring on board, which became a bit problematic, was to say cut now by 10% of the allowances that we are already paying to the people. But we felt that people are already used and comfortable with the allowance that they are getting now, and not to pay and cut by 10% might be a problem for people. So let's rather not cut now, but don't increase it going forward. So we do agree that if we do that and we kept the allowances going forward in the subsequent years coming, we will have a potential saving of approximately 862 million. We have been discussing the issue of the exit strategies. There will still be further engagement between ourselves and Treasury on this particular matter. But the position of the COD is that we will obviously reinstate the MEM and the EIP, which we have stopped in the last 2 years. So we will be continuing with that in the forthcoming financial year. And that will also make it possible for us to reduce certain number of people again, especially those that always have been wanting to leave. But yes, the minister is also still very concerned about how we've been utilizing the MEM. And then we are directed by the minister and the chief to look at stringent methods of how we're going to make sure that we don't exit the people that the department requires. So that it's not just, you know, everybody that believes that they are entitled to leave. So those stringent measures are going to be put in place by HR with all the other service and divisional chiefs as well. The DOD would require additional funding to obviously be able to exit the people, and that's where Treasury will be engaged on this particular intervention. And we know that Treasury always has been amenable to assisting us should we come with a better exit strategy that will be supporting their initiative as well, to reduce the level of the cost in terms of COE. So with the position that the COD has taken now, it gives us an avenue now to go to Treasury and start discussing with Treasury on this particular matter, how they can actually assist us to get the funding to be able to exit those members that we want to exit. In terms of the potential savings, this is just a summary. You'll see, Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, that from the 29 billion that was allocated to us, with the shortfall that was around the 4.3 billion, we're looking at a potential saving of 1.557 in this forthcoming financial year. We're talking now in from April, if we implement it in April. And we accept that it's not sufficient. It's not enough to really make a big dent on the shortfall that we are having, but it is the beginning, as what SecDef also already alluded on that issue. But we know in the subsequent years, this will also start improving if we retain the position of the 73,000 personal strength going forward. The shortfall in this particular financial year, starting in April, we now look at it at approximately going to be 2.8 billion instead of the 4.3. And that's what we are going to be starting with in the next financial year. In conclusion, this is just a summary. We actually saying we are going to effect the compensation of employees shortfall in terms of the intervention that we have put in place. And then we foresee that we are going to be saving the department the amount of 1.557 if we do the following strategies that we have already discussed, which is the summary. I'm not going to repeat on it, but those are the ones that we have already discussed, Chairperson. And that will conclude our presentation. We will now, I will hand over to SecDef.
Thank you very much, Admiral. Thank you very much for this clear presentation. SecDef, can you close the presentation before I invite the members? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, as I had mentioned earlier on, that we looked at a hybrid model, taking into account a number of things, but already it shows that in the financial year that will start as of the 1st of April, we can go to about 1.5 billion. And also, I think that the issue of MEM is the one that I said that we are saying is progress, because we would like to take further consultation on it as well as the EISP. But I think that, Chairperson, with the challenges that we have, if we are able to move and stick to this in the next 3 years, I think that the challenges we've had with the COE will be addressed. And we are aware that it's a problem that we have had for a number of years. And I think that this is a significant step that we have taken to try and have it addressed. And I think that we have covered quite a bit, and then we'll still need to do a little bit of work. But we are happy to take questions, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Now the matter is on the table for discussion. Let me just recognize the hands. There is this icon. I can see Mr. Marais, and the members. Can you utilize section on the right and raise your hand there, right, Mr. Marais?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the presentations by both the SecDef and the Admiral. There's a number of things that I just wanted to raise, and then obviously some questions. Some of the things that I have looked at that is of concern and obviously need to be addressed. The one thing is where the SecDef says that they will now start with interactions with National Treasury and DPSA. In terms of Wilhelm's presentation to us, that was done on 26th of August. That's 6 months ago. 6 months ago. Now, SecDef, we cannot always wait for 6 months before we start with something. Then we're going to run out of every single financial year and nothing will be done, because this matter comes from the fifth parliament already, and we are already halfway into the sixth parliament. So there needs to be some more urgency. Then secondly, to look at the cost of employees in isolation is but one thing. And you know that we must have a more holistic approach, because if you look at the presentation, over the medium term to 2025, there will be a 20 billion rand overspend in terms of cost of employees. 20 billion rand. That's by, in terms of the submission that we have just seen. Now, that must be funded somehow. And in no ways, as we have seen it now, we know the National Treasury's position is, sorry, we're not going to give you money. And I can tell you one of the things that I have picked up, that I think what National Treasury is looking at. The Admiral has given us in the past and then current position, but there are no future position. There are no target to work towards. It's 73,000 and that's it. So there's no indication of reduction, further initiatives, because we know that we have to bring that down, because if we are getting less money from National Treasury for Defence Force, but the cost of employees keep rising, it means that it is even less money for operations and it's even less money for equipment and of maintenance of equipment. So this juncture is just growing out of proportion, and we will eventually be, the Defence Force will be an employment agency and a safety net and not a Defence Force anymore. And that is obviously some of the initiatives that I am at least looking in terms of the presentations from both the HR department and the SecDef. My assumption is, and I can be corrected by the SecDef, that this presentation is something that was consulted with the Military Command Council and the leadership of the Defence Force. If that is the case, then obviously, you know, we sit in a situation where we are exactly where we were, and that was the criticism of National Treasury. Let's be honest, and I don't want to elaborate now on that, but let's be honest, the Auditor General has reported about a 4 billion rand defense intelligence waste. That comes from our budget, not state security or the other portfolio committee. It comes from our budget. The current 260 million rand COVID waste that we have talked, that we will talk about with the AG. And so one can go on and on and go on. And obviously, I suspect the National Treasury has got no sympathy for the Defence Force if there's not clear initiatives and clear indications to bring that number of 73,000 down by way of reprioritization, restructuring. And it doesn't seem from this presentation that there's anything like that coming up. So it's actually, in my opinion, not a very good presentation. And it's not something that is encouraging me to say that, you know, we are moving towards a new Defence Force and a new way of approaching this challenge. The obviously, there are so many things. We have to interact with National Treasury on this, Chairperson, because currently in terms of official government policy, and which is basically based on National Treasury's view and that of the Defence Review, we are worlds apart. And I don't say that we must go to the 40-30-30, but we are just growing further and further away from that. We are now in the 60s, not 60 SecDef, in the 60s. And it's just escalating out of proportion. So somewhere along the line, there must be new initiatives. And I know it's not only the HR department's responsibility. They are a mechanism of what the department and what the Military Command Council is in there has discussed and has agreed how to reduce this burden. Currently, there seems to be the only strategy is, again, what we have got is what we need. That's it. 73,000 with all the budgets that we require, that's it. And we know it's already been said that National Treasury is not going to give us that. They do not expect that. And somehow this must be funded. Remember, that cost of employees is, in terms of this presentation, is without the current 3.8% of ICS and obviously of future years ICS. So this 20 billion rand until 2024-25 shortfall will just increase out of proportion. And I feel personally that we are going to compromise on soldiers, on strategic equipment, on, we're going to increase the porous borders, we're going to increase South Africa's shortfall of its integrity, and obviously our constitutional obligations in terms of Section 200. That is going to be weakened consistently, and I don't see a resolve. So SecDef, how do we approach this from a holistic point of view? And I know there's a challenge, but we have to be difficult. We have to be challenging all these things so that we can come up, hopefully, with a better alternative moving forward. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Murray, you are not assisting me. You are giving us your input. I thought you'd ask direct questions, but I've picked up two or three. Okay, let's move forward because I've ended your comments. Can I take other colleagues as well? Let me just look on the on the screen on the right. There's Honorable Motise. Honorable Motise.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. It's a sad reality that we must face as a country. When we are supposed to be strengthening our defense force, we are actually looking at measures to reduce the capacity of our forces. And that can mean one thing, that we are slowly accepting the fact that the country's defense force is getting weaker and weaker. It is totally not acceptable. When countries, including the countries, our neighboring countries in Africa, they are working very hard to make sure that they strengthen their defense force. It's so sad. But I have two questions with this presentation. The downsizing of strength, it may seem as if it is only focusing on uniform members. By uniform members, I mean forces. I did not see anything about reducing the strength of the civilian personnel that we have in the defense force. So I just need clarity on it. And also, the alternating of calendar year of the MSDS intake, will that also not affect the rejuvenation strategy that was presented in the past few months? What does that say? If we do not recruit new MSDS on a yearly basis, as it usually happens, what does that mean then to the rejuvenation strategy that the Defence Force have? Those are my two questions for now, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ms. Motise. It doesn't look like we have any more hand. Am I correct, colleagues? It looks like that I'm correct. SecDef, this was the last comment on your presentation. May I invite you to comment? I will then make my own comment afterwards. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think that I acknowledge the fact that there has been an engagement with the National Treasurer. But I think that even to the Portfolio Committee, it is a what would I call it, a detailed attempt to really show that there is willingness on the part of the department to really deal with the issues that have been of concern. The reality is that also our economy hasn't been doing well. And Chairperson, in the next 3 years, we already received a letter from Treasury. Our budget is going to be cut by 15 billion rand. And in the past 3 years, MTF, our budget was cut by 18 billion rand, that is 6 billion every year. And now from this coming year, we are going to lose 5 billion every year. So we have realized that, and that's why we have moved away from saying we want to have the strength of 75,000, and then we want to be at 73,000. Right now, as we speak, Chairperson, we are 72,996. Now, we did look at the issue holistically. And that's why I was saying part of the work that we need to do is then to relook at our targets, but also then to say that to what extent are we going to be able, with the resources that we have, to fulfill our constitutional mandate. And I think that that is the question that also Honorable Modise is raising. So we are trying our level best to do that. Now, Chairperson, the 1.5 billion that we say will be a saving, it is a saving of one financial year. So in the next 3 or 4 years, we would have saved about 4.5 billion rand. So this is not going to be a saving of the MTF position. So yes, we have discussed these things even within the MCC. Chairperson, one of the things that I think we need to be upfront with is that this also impacts on the lives of people, and it hasn't been an easy discussion. And yes, maybe there are others who don't even think that maybe this is the way to go, but I think that this is a what we need to do. And I believe that as we go along, we will refine to try and deal with this. Now, on the other issue of the downsizing, we are looking at both aspects, the uniform colleagues through MEM, and then the EISP, which is then our civilian component of the department. In actual fact, within the civilian component, actually, there's been quite a number of posts that have moved even within the uniform colleagues. So when we do the downsizing, if the civilian component is actually going to be much more affected. And of course, yes, with the MSDS, I'm sure Admiral Kuhu will come on this. We said that we can do that once every 3 years, and that is going to give us quite a bit of a saving as well. But once we get to a point where we stabilize, I think we will be able to review that, because we also believe that the rejuvenation must start from the bottom up. And rejuvenation as well will need quite a bit of money, because it's not only the intake of the warm bodies, it is also making sure that they've got tools that they need to be able to do the work. But those are the questions that were raised. I will probably hand over to Admiral Kuhu and then probably talk more also on the issue of the MSDS chairperson. Admiral, if you can.
I just also want firstly to go back to the question of Honorable Marais on the holistic approach, just to confirm that the interventions that we're talking about, all the five, actually will assist us more than if you only use one. I'm just going to use an example to say the exit mechanism that we are putting in place also saves you money in terms of the people that are already on the top notch who will be exiting, whether it's through MEM or normal attrition. When you promote one, they already start on the bottom notch. So those are also the savings. They don't appear on the presentation, but we have factored that as HR to say, every time you lose people, then you don't start with people at the top notch. And there is so much saving that you will still have in that process. So we fully comfortable to say we are still going to have other additional saving outside what we just presented now if people start leaving. Also, we also want to also confirm that also when you don't bring people in, like for example, the MSDSs that Honorable Melissa was talking about, there are obviously implications, as I said also when I started to say, there will always be implications. Rejuvenation, yes, will not come at the speed that we want, but there's a risk that we're also taking in saying, you are not going to have MSDS every year. 1 year that you ski, you will always feel it, because the training evolutions also, you will always have a gap in terms of training people and bringing them up to speed quickly and making sure that you have people that are actually at the required operational level on an annual basis. Those are still the risks that we are actually going to mitigate. But members of the portfolio committee can rest assured that this is just the initial plan. The proper appreciation now, based on the decisions of the COD, is now going to happen, where all these implications are going to be factored in, also including other additional savings based on these interventions. But they're not really appearing now, but we are fully aware that they will be appearing. But we can confirm that, yes, there are challenges that we are going to be facing once we start, obviously, staggering the MSDS intakes. But we don't have another option now if we have to reduce compensation of employees. I submit, Secretary.
Thank you so much, colleagues. Now, look, I think let's accept the presentation the first step towards addressing their problem. It's true that they're dealing with dealing with people here, so it's not going to be easy. We can see that the process is going to be a painful process, but one that will, in the end, guarantee the future of the Defence Force. And the debate at some point was 75,000 strength, and now the department has now conceded that 75,000 is unaffordable. Therefore, the members must be brought down to 73. And they are not saying that they are going to stop at 73,000. They're looking at other avenues that would bring the numbers further down. And the MEM and the EISP, those are the areas that they're looking at. And I thought that combined will, in the end, give us additional savings that would eventually see the department contending the over expenditure on the compensation of employees. It's been a singular item that has been a threat to the Defence Force, and because it has started compromising other capabilities. Was the money that the department overspent by on this particular item, it's money that must be saved, inverted commas, in other capabilities to subsidize the compensation of employees. It's not a saving in those capabilities. They have to cut and they reduce training hours by the Army, sea hours by the Navy, and flying hours by the Air Force. And there has been the issue of maintenance as well, and let alone new acquisitions. So that's the problem that we is facing this department. Now, with this move being taken, it's going to free up resources that could then be utilized in other areas. But it's not going to happen this year, possibly not next year. Maybe we'll start to see results in the last year of the MTF and in the future MTF. I take this as a step in the right direction, and it is in that context that I welcome it. It's different from saying they are not moving. They have moved. They have moved a bit. It was in that context that I allowed us to recap on the previous discussion so that we can see whether there is a movement or not. With that, we'll monitor the implementation of this plan. The good thing that there is a buy-in from the Council of Defense, and which is chaired by the minister, and it assures us that everything that has been presented here today will find expression in the operations of the department. So, colleagues, thank you very much, SecDef, for this presentation, and we can now move to the next item. And that item is on the audit action plan of the department. And
thank you very much, Chairperson. I am with the CFO and Mr. Adam Abosi. We are going to be presenting to the honourable members on the audit action plan that we developed after AGE had done the audit of our annual work, and some issues came out of their audit report. So this is the plan that shows what it is the department is doing to address the issues and the recommendations that were raised by the Auditor General. And then we got qualifications in two areas, which is around the issues of goods and services, and then also the irregular expenditure. And I think we came down from six audit qualifications in the previous year to two qualifications this year. And then I think then the other aspect of the report, Chairperson, was the one on the issue of procurement. And I must say that this time around, in terms of asset management, we didn't have any other qualifications, but we still believe that as a department, we need to build our own capacity around the issues of asset management. But I would allow the CFO and the team to take us through the presentation, Chairperson, if you agree. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the Secretary is alluding to, that we only received two qualifications. But in terms of the action plan, Chairperson, we covered even the issue of the asset management to say, although we did not have the qualification, but those areas that were achieved during the management letter, we're also dealing with it in the action plan. I need to highlight to the members that although it's not highlighted into the presentation, the issues of maintenance for those areas that were the problem in the previous years, we're also working on those ones to make sure that in future they are not coming back to bite us to become a qualification Chairperson. Mr. Aposti will do the presentation, the full presentation. Then after the presentation, then the honorable members will able to ask questions, and then so that we can elaborate even more. But before Mr. Aposti take the presentation, Chairperson, on a continuous basis, we've got an engagement with the affected divisions to make sure that these areas are get dealt with. We don't wait for the end of the year to make sure to clear those ones. That is where we are at the moment. Mr. Aposti will do the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Chairperson, as the SecDef indicated earlier on.
Thank you so much, CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the SecDef indicated earlier and the explanations given by the CFO, we're qualified on two paragraphs last year, two balances in our financial statements. The first one was on goods and services and investments within the special defense accounts. The qualification basically had was based on the limitations that are imposed on the auditors in terms of the transactions within the sensitive environment of the SDA. The auditors do audit, information is given to them, but because of the inherent risk that is within the sensitive environment, we did get qualified on that. The second one was on the completeness of irregular expenditure. So the AG raised an issue on the completeness of irregular expenditure, stating that because of the way our systems are, they could not confirm that all irregular expenditure was identified and recorded by the department. And then there were other non-compliances that were identified by the AG based on these two qualifications. The details of the qualifications, the first one was within the sensitive environment, as I've just explained. So within the sensitive environment of the special defense accounts, there are transactions that are basically covert operations that the AG cannot or do not place a full reliance on because of the nature of the transactions within that environment. Chairperson, it must also be noted that within the SDA, the sensitive environment only accounts for approximately 9% of the total spending within the special defense accounts. and approximately 2% of the entire expenditure budget or spending of goods and services within the department. So we've always said it's immaterial comparatively to the entire population of the department. But because of the materiality of the auditors and the way they audit, they've always said there's an inherent risk that they would not be able to audit the transactions within the special defense account and within the sensitive environment. So hence, that qualification remains. This qualification is not unique to the Department of Defense. It also has an impact on the crime intelligence and the state security. The action plans we've come up with throughout all the years, I think over the last 6 years or so when we started getting this qualification, there has been discussions with yourselves and also with the Portfolio Committee on Intelligence on how do we manage this possible risk of completeness within the COVID space, within the SDA. There was a benchmarking undertaken by the Auditor General, Crime Intelligence, the State Security, and the Defense Intelligence of the DOD. And this was about 3 years ago. There was a report that was submitted to the Portfolio Committee on Intelligence on what other countries are doing with regard to the specific environment of the COVID space within the Special Defense Account. So it's under consideration right now by the Portfolio Committee on Intelligence. From a departmental point of view, we've submitted everything that can be audited by the AG, but I'm sure when the AG responds, they'll be able to explain to you in detail why they still cannot fully rely on the information that we give them and why they do qualify us on a yearly basis on the transactions within that space. Our next qualification had to deal with the completeness of irregular expenditure. We do, the AG's main concern was within the procurement environment of the DOD, they cannot determine or they don't have adequate assurance that we have a system to identify, to detect, and to record irregular expenditure within the financial records of the department. So last year, we incurred irregular expenditure of $2.8 billion, and included in that $2.8 billion is the underfunding of the $2.6 billion, which was just discussed by the Chief Human Resources now. Now, with regard to that shortfall, we just had a whole discussion around it, and we have also discussed this with National Treasury, but as you are fully aware, based on the presentation that was just done by Admiral Kubu, of all the challenges we face there. So a bulk of that transactions that we face, the irregular expenditure that were recorded, all has to do with compensation of employees. The difference of approximately $2.4 billion that has been recorded over all the years within the special defense accounts, and for the current year that we just finished auditing was approximately about 200 million rand, 200 million rand worth of irregular expenditure that was disclosed in the financial records. This was based on transactions over the previous years that were incurred in the past that we record in the financial statements. Irregular expenditure is only recorded in the financial statements as and when payments are made. So for the current year that ended, or this audit of 2019-2020, there was another 200 million of irregular expenditure that we incurred. The controls we put in place is currently the Internal Audit Division, the Inspector General and the Military Police are investigating the circumstances surrounding the incurrence of these irregularities. And then there are recommendations that are made that are being implemented by the department. Not all the investigations are finalized, but there is progress in most of them. We do acknowledge, and you are aware, that within the Department of Defense, procurement is not placed within the correct division as in terms of the PFMA and the Treasury regulations. Due to the transactions or due to the way the department is structured, procurement lies within the logistics environment because they are fully supportive of the services and divisions within the Department of Defense. Now, there are processes that we've placed that are in place to deal with these anomalies, which we are trying to streamline and improve on a yearly basis to reduce the amount of irregularities that we incur. Towards the end of 2019, based on all the findings we've been getting from the Auditor General, there is a committee that we've established, a Governance, Risk and Compliance Accountability Committee for Procurement, which was set up within all the units and divisions within the Department of Defense who are responsible for procurement and acquisition of goods for the department. It must also be noted that a lot of these procurement agencies run throughout the country, all the way from Messina, all the way down to Cape Town, to support the soldiers within all the provinces and the regions of the country during their deployments and their employments by the president to do specific things for the department. So what this committee does, this committee goes around the province and to all the procurement units to train them and educate them, all these procurement practitioners, on the understanding of the supply chain management prescripts and legislation that governs the supply chain management and to ensure that they apply it consistently. This committee also does oversight visits across the country, focusing specifically on high-risk items or high-risk areas and findings that have to be picked up from the internal control environment and the Auditor General to ensure that we do adhere to all policies of the department or supply chain management policies and legislation that come through from National Treasury. In the past, we've always had challenges in terms of consequence management, but the accounting officer is doing everything she can to ensure that we do enhance this environment, and where there are serial offenders within the procurement centers, especially the bigger ones within Pretoria and Cape Town, these specific offenders are moved away from the procurement environment and dealt with. We also, at the department, researching on an automated procurement process, which is integrated with finance, where we are able to monitor what happens across all the regions of the Department of Defense. So where there are transactions or procurements at the units throughout the country, if we have an integrated procurement system, we'll be able to monitor what is happening electronically, because all the transactions will be recorded electronically. So from a central point, we can monitor the planning and the reporting instruments within the procurement environment and to be able to deal with all the irregularities. So where a supplier is awarded a contract without a valid tax clearance certificate, the system will be able to assist us in picking up these irregularities. Now, moving on to asset management. We were not qualified in the 2019-2020 financial year on asset management. In the past, we have always received qualifications on intangible assets and tangible assets. But we were able to resolve a lot of those issues in the previous financial year when the AG did not qualify us on any of those aspects. Now, the various controls that we have put in place was to ensure that we do address all the issues that were raised by the AG. If you do recall, over the last 2 years, we were qualified on the disclosure of work in progress. We did discuss our plans with you in the previous years and were able to implement it through the first interim financial statements we issued in September 2019. Based on that and in conjunction with AMSCOP, we were able to do extensive work in terms of the modified cash standard and what accounting framework required us to do to ensure that we were able to present and record the work in progress within the AMSCOP environment and within the work that we do within the DOD in the financial statements. The AG was able to audit this through the interim financial report that we issued in September 2019 and the final audits, the final financial statements of 2019-2020. And there was no material findings that were picked up by the AG for us to be qualified on. Our next challenges had to do with within the asset environment was the capital components, where there was always a challenge in terms of whether if specific assets were either should to be recorded as inventory or as capital assets. We were able to write a position paper, discuss it with National Treasury and the Auditor General, and a consensus was reached, and we were able to treat these items in that 2019 financial year and recorded it in the financial statements, disclosed it correctly, accounted for our assets correctly, and we're not qualified on that by the AG. So these are the structures, or these are the controls we're able to put in place from the previous financial years to deal with these issues. Okay. And going forward, we're also doing everything we can to ensure that these controls are implemented.
Can come here, help us. And it can be the last one. Looks like you were the last one.
There's interference.
Who's talking? And someone is talking.
I've muted him.
Is he not talking from your side? I don't see anyone.
It was the Defense Force Service Commission.
Thank you so much. My apologies for this disturbance.
Proceed.
You also break.
May I proceed, Chairperson?
Yeah, please proceed. The chair is breaking.
Thank you so much. Thanks for meeting them, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we also plan on doing as a department,
considering
establishing an...
Yes, you may. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we're also considering as a department going forward is to establish an asset management structure through a phased-in approach to ensure that there's a consistent stability within the asset management environment to manage the assets of the department. We're also doing everything we can from the service and divisions to encourage them to establish their own capacity and capability to improve on the accountability of assets under their command and control. Because if we do this, then our reliance on consultants will be reduced and we can have some consistency within the department to manage the asset management environment and to be able to deal with all the control weaknesses that we had in the past and to ensure that the asset qualification is eradicated forever. Chairperson, to also deal with all the other issues that were raised by the AG in terms of non-compliance, on other environments within the department. As the CFO indicated earlier on, services and divisions have submitted action plans detailing on how they plan on controlling and managing the control weaknesses which resulted in findings raised by the AG in the past. What these action plans are going to be doing is to deal with these non-compliances and all the findings, and then these will be monitored by the Internal Audit Division and the Service Inspector Generals who are in each service and division to ensure that the action plans submitted by the service and divisions are monitored and managed and to ensure that at least we deal with all the previous findings and they are adequately addressed by these environments before the AG comes to audit for the current financial year. There's also a monthly accountability management committee called the AMC within the department. This is chaired by the Secretary for Defense and attended by all chiefs of service and divisions. At every meeting on a monthly basis, these service chiefs account to the SecDev, who is the chair of this meeting, on what they are doing to address the prior year audit findings. So based on these interventions that we have as a department, we should be able to reduce our audit qualifications going forward. As indicated earlier on, the only challenge we have that we think we'll not be able to resolve immediately is the qualification on the special defense accounts due to the limitation that the AG has identified as an inherent risk. Chairperson, that is the end of the presentation on the action plans that we as a department have put in place to deal with the AGSA's findings. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Chairperson.
Thank you. Colleagues, that then takes care of the presentation. SecDev, any comment before I open it up for a discussion?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that as Mr. Abosi alluded to, these are the things that we are trying to do to ensure that at least as we go along and we get audited, that the findings become less and less. And also, Chairperson, just to add over and above the issue of the AMC, is that we have now a fully constituted audit committee, which is also helping in a number of respects. And one of the things that we have decided to do is that even in the audit committee, we would want the level of attendance to be at the level of the chiefs of the services, because then they get given the resources and they have to account for those resources. Otherwise, I think that our efforts right now are really more geared towards the strengthening of the internal controls and see what it is that we are going to be able to get, and then where necessary, then build our own capacity. So this, again, is a part of the attempt that we're taking to really get things back to line and streamline. And you see that at least we have moved a step forward as well from the number of qualifications we had. Chairperson, part of the challenges on the goods and services, it is because of the limitation of scope. Now, this would regard with the, will have to deal with part of the FDA and then part of the projects that are run by the colleagues in defense intelligence. Now, we are trying to see also what would be the best way of really accounting for those, because if money is raised, then we need to find a way. And for as long as Auditor General is not able to see the information, they will always qualify us, because then they are not given the latitude to be able to see what is there and be able to express their opinion, Chair. But otherwise, Chairperson, I think we are happy to take the questions.
Chair, you are muted. Chair, you are muted.
Thank you, Mr. Mare. I see Ms. Bickers, I see Mr. Mare, and I also see Thabo Motle. In that order, please. Ms. Bickers, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Thanks, the department.
Sorry, may I ask that the screen be cleared, please? Thank you. Yes, Ms. Bickers, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, thanks to the department for the presentation. And Chair, I'm trying to establish the ownership of the action plan as a working document and as a succession plan, but I can't find it. There's no progressiveness in the action plan and there's no boomer in the action plan. I want to know, Chair, do they have a champion for the plan or a dedicated person to monitor the implementation or the impact of the plan? That's my first question. Chair, secondly, looking at the presentation on the status of the audit action plan on the 26th of February 2020, they report that SEM practitioners are being trained, but today, almost a year later, they're still reporting on training and education of procurement practitioners. Now, my question, Chair, is they don't tell us what the impact of their training was. And secondly, was there a tool to measure the impact of the training? And why is there still in need, on 6th of February last year, of updating the asset management policy, and thereafter they will update the asset register. Today in the plan, they are considering the establishment of an asset management structure and they encourage services and divisions to improve on the accountability on the asset management. But what is the status of the management policy and are the register updated? My last one, Chair, is they also report that they have an oversight committee within the department to monitor the DoD procurement entities. Now they report that a government risk and compliance accountability committee for procurement has been set up. I want to know, is it the same committee? They state the functions of the committee, but not what the desired outcome of that committee is and the time frame for that outcome. And to whom are that committee reporting? And are they only make recommendations? And what is the time frame for reporting? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. And then the next person is Mr. Mare.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the presentation. I just want to start off by saying that I support Honorable Beekers in some of her concerns, because, I mean, we know that this is not the first time that we hear many of those intended action plans and intentions to do. However, one must acknowledge the improvement in terms of the of the qualifications. In that regard, I also want to ask whether it is possible for us to get interaction or presentations from the internal audit specifically on the duties that they fulfill, and also those service inspector generals, because clearly their work that they do has got a direct impact on whether, you know, all these challenges are addressed and it be properly communicated, so that we know whether it has been communicated, whether it has effectively been addressed, or whether there are delays that we have to take up with the sector or even with the minister if required. Then secondly, obviously in the slides, the DOD acknowledges the shortfalls. So they are at least honest about those shortfalls and the challenges that they are facing with. I've got two specific concerns that we have now battled with for a number of years. And it deals with defense intelligence, and it deals with the special defense account. Now, I know what the arrangement is, that, you know, special defense account is confidential. Somehow we are not privileged to that information, although it's part of our budget. And there are things that obviously we don't know, and we have to accept on face value and in good faith. But I want to ask the SecDef specifically whether she is prepared to give us a written confirmation that all those projects under the special defense account is of such a sensitive nature that it cannot be reported to us. Because then at least the SecDef confirms to us that she is putting her head on the block to confirm to us that these are in fact so sensitive that it cannot be divulged to us. Then obviously as well, if you look at this, at the defense intelligence, and again, I know about this, but again, from the Secretary of Defense, who has got access to all that information, we know that there was reported a 4 billion rand irregular and wasteful expenditure by defense intelligence. Now, let's be honest. They don't report to us on that. And with the greatest respect to our colleagues in the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence, they do not have the information and the background knowledge that we've got in terms of defense priorities. So we cannot expect, and we don't have interaction with them, so we cannot expect of them to know whether that is justified or not. So we can only rely on the confirmation and the written confirmation by the Secretary of Defense at this stage, because 4 billion rand can reduce the total over expenditure by cost of employees. And how do we know that all of those are justified? We don't know that. And we know that National Treasury has got their doubts, certainly about, you know, the so-called wasteful expenditure of defense intelligence and the special defense account. Remember, the special defense account has been depleted to a large extent because of the transfer of the money to pay for the over expenditure of cost of employees for a number of years until the SDA is basically, you know, depleted to a large extent. So how do we deal with that, and to what extent can the Secretary of Defense give us that assurance and guarantees. And then lastly, maybe just with a bit of a tongue in the cheek in terms of the asset management and the centralization, I recall at our visit to Komati Port, the officer commanding shared with us a frustration, which is a very practical frustration. They said to us, for those land cruisers, that there's only one tire that can deal with that terrain, and that is the, I think he called it the BF Goodrich brand. And he has explained to us that when they had a complaint and a query from the procurement division in Pretoria to ask, who is this service provider BF Goodrich? And this doesn't seem like a proper procurement. I mean, they don't even know the brands of the tires. So somewhere things are going wrong, and our soldiers on the borders are not properly serviced because of this procurement system that we have got. They don't even know the brands of tires and what is the preferred tires. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Mutle?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I have four questions. My first one is around training. I think Honorable Dukas has also touched on this one. Because in my own understanding, the department training should be continuous. In a sense that from time to time there might be circulars and changing of regulation from time to time. So the department will from time to time ensure that those that are in the procurement division are able to align with those regulations and circular as and when they are issued. It appears in the action plan as if it's a response to what the AG has picked up, that there's something that is not happening there in terms of training. Which I believe it should be continuous. It should not suffice that if an action plan based on what has been picked up by the AG. It should be something that is continuously happening within the department. Can I just get a clarity on that, whether it's happening continuously or is happening as a plan in response to what the AG has pointed out as a grey area or something that the department does not do. Secondly, I'm a bit worried with investigations that are done continuously and they seemingly do not seem to come to an end. It is now becoming a defense mechanism to run away from accountability or implementing consequence measures. Because year in, year out, you are investigating and investigating. We have not been provided with tangible action taken to ensure that there are consequences for irrational actions that are taken by certain individual within the department or within the force. So I think it is becoming unacceptable, Chair, if one may say so, that we can't continue to have investigation as action plans that do not come to an end, and at the end we are not given a report on the conclusions of those investigations and the consequences measures that have been taken. The third one is around what they raise. I'm not sure whether they raise as a matter of concern, or they raise it because there is something that they have started or they are intending to do. Maybe they can just clarify, because the point that appears there says the process is in place to see how they address the anomaly that they have spotted in terms of the location of the procurement division. Because my understanding of an action plan will tell us that we have identified as an anomaly. So you'll be able to say, this is what we are going to correct, that a particular anomaly, if you identify it as such. So in this action plan, I don't see pointing out an anomaly as an action plan. An action plan should be saying, this is what we are going to do. And this action plan is silent on that. I find it very much a lack of decisiveness, or they are giving us information that is not fully fleshed. So can they tell us that, can they give us an action plan or their plan in terms of addressing that anomaly, if they have, of course. My last one is on the compensation of employee. I was also listening to Admiral Kubu when he was presenting, because I think somehow they tally what the action plan is saying and what Admiral Kubu has presented with regard to compensation of employee. But I think in my little understanding, the plan should be clearly outlining the actions that they are going to take in terms of addressing this issue. And for them to come and say, we will implement and see where we get it right, I don't think is correct, because the plan should be details and say, in the presentation of Admiral Kubu, it says this particular financial year will have a shortfall of so much, the next financial year will have a shortfall of so much, but in terms of implementing the reduction of the total personnel, it should be a plan that details to say this financial year will have a shortfall of so much by so and so year, financial year, this matter will be addressed, not making assumption that as if it's a problem that has got an infinite ending. So we understand that there are pressures, and it's an unfortunate situation that the department finds itself in. But as they have started to say they are going to reduce, it should be clear when they reduce, when are we not going to continue having that particular irregular expenditure. And subsequently, what is it that they are doing to ensure that it does not become an irregular going forward, because they are aware of it that is going to happen. Why don't they seek an condonement in advance from Treasury to ensure that when the AG comes, it does not become an irregular expenditure? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Thabo. You were, according to the list on the system, the last speaker on the item. colleagues, I think is I must now ask the department to respond. But before they do that, SECDEF, I think what is coming up clearly is that your audit action plan lacks specificities. And it's not specific in many aspects. And it's difficult to, you know, monitor the implementation of the plan. And I hope you take that to heart, go back, rework the plan, and then come back to us so that we are then able to monitor it progressively. The way you have presented it, it says this is what is going to happen, but you are not committing yourselves to specifics where by when this will be achieved. And I know it's your commitment that this must be achieved this year, so it comes the new audit report. Some of these matters you know, would have been attended to. And I think we need to improve on that. And two colleagues, there's an item on irregular expenditure and consequence management. In May last year, we called for a report on the probe that the department had you know, launched into irregular expenditure. In May, no one pitched up. It became a concern. And we rescheduled the item. I think it was in November, October, November, thereabout, where we received a detailed report. But we were told that it was work in progress. The main interest of the committee was on consequence management, and to that, even matters that were, you know, that did not require intense, you know, investigations, were reported as still under investigation almost a year or two. Some date back to three, four years. And that became a concern to all of us, that the department was not, you know, treating the investigations into irregular expenditure with the urgency that it requires. And you see, if anything, they didn't show that they were concerned about what we were concerned about. So we said we would reschedule this item again. So we have this item on the program of the 26th of February this month, in other words, in 3 weeks' time, where the department will come back again to make a presentation on this. This time around, we don't want to be told that there is work in progress on almost every single item that is affected by irregular expenditure. They must tell us which one of those have been concluded and what have been the consequences as a result thereof. All right. So not that we're just told that no, it's work in progress and continuously. No, no, we'll not accept that. So that is on the agenda of the 26th of February. But the rest, I leave it to the colleagues, I mean, to the department to comment on. Shelembe, I only see your hand now. It's not my intention to leave you out. Let me allow you to speak. And if you could be brief, please. I just want to save a bit of time for the report on the AG. And now it's 4 minutes past 12. Yes, Shelembe.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I won't take much of your time. Chairperson, I think I missed out something here. You know, when it comes to the issue that for them to enhance the consequence management, that the staff or the serial offenders are removed from those procurement posts to another post, I'm trying to say, are removed from work, is this a punishment or what, that if they are the serial offenders, but they are being moved to another position because of being involved in many cases? Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No, thanks. Thanks so much. Perspective, I'm not going to grant you, I'll just grant you 5 to 10 minutes between the two of you to respond to these matters, because they will come, they'll have to come back again at some point because of the concern that the colleagues have raised, that it lacks some specificities. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me say that the action plan is an attempt on the part of the department to actually address the issues that came up as findings from the AG and also the qualified aspects of the audit report that we made. I think, Chairperson, I take the points that we are making and that maybe we need to give specific time frames. But already part of the action plan we have started implementing, Chairperson. On the issue of the training, Chairperson, we are, you know, because if you looked at the 2019-2020 audit report, most of our issues were around procurement. So we thought that let's take an initiative and design some training where we go through all the procurement centers and give training. So that training, yes, indeed, as Honorable Mutle said, it is on an ongoing basis. It's not a start and stop. And I think that's part of the, you know, some of the issues that we have been dealing with that have been a problem, they are beginning to reduce. And I think that when we do that on a consistent basis, I think that is where we'll be able to quantify the success that we are making. The asset register, it is updated. There was a question that was asked, and then all that we are doing, Chairperson, if you would recall, one of the other irregular expenditure we're dealing with was a project around the issue of asset management contracts. And we thought that rather than spend so much money on these contracts, why not also look at the possibility of building our own capacity so that then we can sustain, you know, a clean record that we have around the issues of capacity. So we felt that, you know, it costs us a lot more to do that, but maybe in the long term it will be a saving on our part if we do that within the department. Now, Chairperson, in terms of the investigations, we also did give an undertaking to the Auditor General. We have done our own 3 investigations, at least internally. That is over and above what the IG as well as the military police are investigating. So with those ones we've submitted, and I think, Chairperson, our meeting is on the 24th with yourself. And then I think that we will come back with a comprehensive report on that. But I am, you know, we have been also in constant interaction with the chief of the services, some of the members, and I think that we will give you also the figures. There are some of the members that have been suspended, some of the members that have been fired, and then some of the members that, you know, have been held to account. I did mention, Chairperson, and I think in the past that we have also been interacting with the Special Investigation Unit, and they have done quite a bit of work on some of those irregular expenditure. And we have been contacted by the Hawks because from what the investigation came out, it was felt that on some of those aspects, law enforcement agencies must kick in terms of taking the process forward. So I received a letter from the Hawks and we gave them all the information that they wanted. But also with some of those, the process is twofold. In one aspect, we were recovering the money. So we managed to recover a tune of about 41 million on one project, and then there is a potential for us to recover a further 70 million, and we are in discussion on a consistent basis with the people from the SIU. And then also now, I think the one for the criminal aspect, we were contacted somewhere in the middle of December. So we have given them all that information, and that is what we are doing. And there are also other projects that the SIU has been in touch with us, but they are at its infancy. But then, as I say, Chairperson, on the 24th, we will try to give you a much more comprehensive report that will also talk to the figures as well. Chairperson, I am not in a position right now to respond to the question that Honourable Marais has raised, because the projects, Chairperson, that are run by the Defence Intelligence, they are SANDF related projects. And those are the projects that they are running and that they are accounting for. I do believe, though, Chairperson, that we need to investigate a possibility that can be done. Because, yes, to run those projects, it costs money. And if we are giving finances, it means we have to account for them. And if you would allow me, Chairperson, may I hand over to the CFO?
Thanks, SecDef, CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a concern that was raised by the Honourable Member, Mrs. Lucas, concerning with the ownership of the action plan. The action plan, each division prepared the action plan, and then it forwarded to the CFO's office for consultation purposes. And then so that it can be discussed on a monthly basis through the ANC, where all the chief of services are presented to make sure that it gets the day, so to make sure that each service it gets their own action plan to be presented in order to resolve those issues that has been appearing to the audit report. That is what happened, the ownership of that. So in the Office of the Urban Finance, we are consolidating all those action plans that are coming from the different services and divisions. That is what was that, the Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you so much, CFO. All right. There was Mr. Marais suggested that at some point we must invite the internal audit. I think that is on the is on our program for this year. Okay. Remember, we resolved that we must now call the audit committee and the internal audit committee to speak to us on their findings. Remember, they also filed their own separate report in the annual report to be talking to us on that, and telling us how they are improving audit in department, as it were.
And Chairperson, those inspector generals, audit inspector generals, who obviously have been mentioned in the report. So those are the people that we can interact with to get the direct information. Thank you very much.
Yes. No. Let's discuss the Inspector General one. I'm not quite certain that fully understand the point you're making, but we'll talk about it. If we together find a common agreement on it, we'll see if we cannot have it in the second term program. All right. So I'm not shutting the door to it. Let's talk about it. Because we must first check what is it that we want to get from them, which we cannot get from the other agencies, and that we are calling upon. It's fine. We'll look at that. All right, colleagues. I think we have concluded this, yes, there was an issue of condonement. Let's pick up all the matters related to irregular expenditure consequence management and regularization of the irregular expenditure, including condonement, to the meeting on the 24th. Do you agree with that, Thabo?
No, I'm agreeing, Chair, and I'm also agreeing to your proposal that they must go back and strengthen their action plan, and we'll invite them again. Thank you.
Yes. No. Thank you so much. Does your action plan ever, does the AG ever comment on your action plan, SecDef?
They do, Chairperson. We submit it to them.
You submit it to them. Oh, I see. At least that gives us comfort in that some issues may also be picked up with them as well. Fine, we'll leave it at that. Yes, if you could just address it, tighten it up, enhance it, and just give us some more specifics, specificities, I would appreciate it, SG. Thank you so much. Eh?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Right, colleagues, I think we can close this item on that note, that it's work in progress. We'll have to have a second bite at some point, because these are matters that are you know, ongoing. Yes, now it's time now where I should look at the next item on the agenda, and it's the briefing by the AG on their second report. It's on the PPE stroke COVID-19 expenditure for the year under review. And OG, and I now grant you the opportunity. Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Mbali will be doing the presentation for us, and then we will be taking questions, and I will then be asking the relevant colleagues to respond to the questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Mbali, over to you, ma'am.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members. Thank you for this opportunity to present on the special report. I have asked Brian to help me with sharing the presentation. Thank you, Brian. As indicated, Chair, we'll be presenting on the COVID-19 initiatives implemented by the Department of Defense. If you can move to the next slide, Brian. We start off, as always, with our mandate as Auditor General of South Africa. We exist to strengthen this country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through the audit work that we are doing, with the ultimate goal of building public confidence. So, Chairperson, we are here once again to assist you and the committee in doing oversight over the work that we have presented in the special report, and also trying to enforce also accountability in terms of the recommendations that are made in this report. Chairperson, the report looked at how the department implemented financial management controls around the COVID-19 funds that were afforded to the department. We'll also then give you the highlight on the key recommendations that we made. The focus areas looked at the deployment of soldiers in the various provinces to assist with enforcing law and order, especially during the hard lockdown and beyond that. We also looked at the implementation of additional health measures, which included, amongst others, the establishment of quarantine sites, laboratories, and field hospitals. Chairperson, you will note that some of these initiatives were not implemented because of various reasons, but I'll talk to that in the next slide, where we also analyze the spending. We also focus on the spending around procurement of personal protective equipment and the procurement and the recording thereof in the financial records. And we also looked at the repatriation of the South African citizens from Wuhan, which was one of the key missions that was done by the department. Chairperson, in analyzing the budget versus actual spending, I just want to bring to the attention of the committee that we are looking at 4.3 billion, which is made up of the 3 billion that was provided as additional funding for COVID-19 by National Treasury, and the balance of 1.3 billion was what the department was supposed to reprioritize internally to also fund the COVID-19 initiatives, because in the plan that was submitted by the department, they had requested 4.5 billion from National Treasury, but National Treasury could only afford 3 billion that was in addition, and the 1.3 billion was then, it was then indicated in that special adjustment budget that it must be reprioritized. I just thought that I must mention that, because in the previous presentations to this committee, there was an indication of the 3 billion which was coming from National Treasury. At a high level, Chair, the budget we analyzed it between the deployment-related expenditure as well as facilities, medical equipment, PPE, as well as other supporting expenditure. So on deployment, the total amount that was budgeted was 1.3 billion. 763 of that was for wages and allowances to the deployed soldiers. And at the end of September 2020, 700 million of that has been spent on wages and allowances, whilst 112.3 million had been spent on the other expenses that are related to the deployment, like the fuel, the rations, and fleet services. On support facilities and other expenditure, we looked at PPE. There was 1 billion that was budgeted for PPE, and at end of September, 849.7 million had been spent. With regards to medicine, the budget was 65.9 million, and the actual spending, according to the records, was 4.61 million. However, we made a note of that in the special report as well to highlight that the amount should have been higher than 4.6, because there was an error that we identified during the audit, that 34.86 million that was spent was then misclassified and not recorded under medicine. But this was being rectified by management at the time of the report. Facilities and medical equipment, Chair, the budget was 1.3 billion. And at the end of September, 181.5 million had been spent. And the reason for that, Chairperson, was that some of the initiatives that were planned, like I indicated in the focus areas, which included field hospitals, quarantine sites and laboratories, did not materialize for various reasons. So as a result, the amount spent was much lower than what was budgeted. Also, medical equipment was still in the process of being procured, so it had not been as paid for at the time of this report. Hence, the spending was sitting at 181.5 million. So instead of procuring field hospitals and quarantine sites, the department opted to refurbish one military hospital at a cost of 151 million rand. And that was done mainly to increase capacity for isolation, wherein 60 additional beds were included. And there was also 40 ICU beds that were built into one new hospital at that cost of 151 million. Then the other related frontline services relate to other support costs that were then incurred by the department as part of responding to COVID-19 initiatives, which may include operational costs, S&T, as well as clothing. Thank you. Okay, I will now then move to each focus areas and highlight the key findings that were reported in our special report. With regards to deployment of soldiers, Chair, we focused on verifying the allowances that were paid to the deployed forces, the both regular and reserve members, covering the period 1 April to 31 July 2020. There were some challenges that we encountered in terms of covering the whole period up to 30 September. But for the period that we looked at, there were no discrepancies that we identified. We will still look at the other deployment part that we did not review during this initiative, which covers the period 1 August to 30 September 2020. But this will be part of the normal audit process there will be no special report in this regard. Chairperson, I now move to the next area, which relates to COVID-19-related medicine, which is one area also there to look at as part of this COVID-19 audit. So in terms of the key findings that we reported, the first one was that some of the information that we requested during the audit was not provided, so we had some limitations then in the process. As a result, some of the procedures that we wanted to perform, we couldn't perform as a result of those limitations. We also noted that there was inadequate planning for the procurement of heparin alpha R, which contains the active ingredient interferon alpha 2B, which was procured for approximately 260.59 million rand. We're saying that because it was not clear from the documentation received how the department determined the required quantities for this heparin. We also could not find evidence that the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, SAHPRA, provided approval to the department prior to the importation of heparin. The next finding was that we also noted the open-ended contract used during the procurement was only signed after the first delivery had taken place. So the first delivery took place on the 27th of April 2020. So it was already delivered by 27th of April 2020, but the contract was only signed on the 28th of April after the first delivery was made. And Chairperson, why we are saying it's an open-ended contract is because the contract was not clear on the number of vials to be imported as well as the total amount to be spent in relation to this procurement. There was subsequent SAHPRA approval, but only for 10 vials as opposed to the 970,895 vials that had been imported already by the department. We noted also, Chairperson, that there was no post-importation testing. There was a breach of cold chain requirements, which resulted in approximately 40% of the vial's integrity being possibly compromised. None of the 970,000 vials were accounted for in the department's inventory system. As the payment of 34.886 million was not accounted for correctly in the financial records, which was what I was indicating in the previous slide, Chair, on the spending, that the amount spent was a bit higher than what was in the records, and that was because the 34.86 million was incorrectly accounted for. So the key recommendations, Chairperson, that we made with regard to this focus area was that the department must institute a formal process to monitor compliance with legislation before and during medicine procurement, and that they must put measures in place to ensure that the inventories and the payments thereof are properly recorded in the inventory system as well as the financial records. Okay, I now move to the focus area that deals with medical equipment and support facilities. As like I indicated earlier, there wasn't much that was done in terms of spending on medical equipment and support facilities for various reasons. So the focus was only on medical equipment, the planning thereof, because the department was still in the procurement stage at the time that we did the audit. So the first finding that we noted around planning was that the planning done was not adequate to justify the required levels of medical equipment. The department was procuring or was planning to procure 22,386 units of medical equipment at a cost of 411 million. So we found that when you looked at the information provided to indicate how this was planned, it was not adequate to indicate what informed then the decision around the number that was required for medical equipment. We then recommended that the department must then improve their planning processes by using the relevant data that will enhance their planning decisions. Chairperson, with regards to the second finding, or wherein we are highlighting internal control weaknesses in the procurement process, this finding relates to a bid that was advertised by the department and subsequently cancelled. We still looked into this process because we were doing a proactive audit, and our aim was to ensure that we highlight preventative controls deficiencies so the department can strengthen them when they continue to procure other facilities in future. So that's why we then looked at this procurement process so that we can note what went wrong in the process and then make recommendations to the department. So we noted that with this procurement process, there was no proper demand and needs analysis or assessment that was done. And that the specifications for this procurement were only improved and completed after the department had a briefing session with one of the prospective service providers. The bidders only had 48 hours to respond for this requirement, and which was budgeted 738 million. This requirement was for quarantine sites. At that point in time, the department was still in the process of establishing quarantine sites. We also noted that the department did not record or approve the reasons for the emergency procurement. So even though this procurement was in the end, after being advertised, cancelled, but there were a number of internal control deficiencies that had already happened in the process towards the advertising of the requirement. So we made recommendations then to the accounting office so that in future for such requirements and for all procurement processes that are of an emergency nature, the reasons must be documented and approved. The department should allow reasonable timeframes for the submission of bids so that the process is fair to all prospective bidders, and also to investigate the reasons for the control weaknesses, in particular the unfair advantage that was given to one particular supplier. Chair, this slide then deals with the observations that we noted when it comes to personal protective equipment that was procured by the department. The first one is that we noted also again here the issue around planning, that there was inadequate planning to support the number of the PPE to be procured to support the department. There was also a lack of preventative controls in the manual inventory system to manage the receipt, accounting, and the distribution of PPE. In particular, the reconciliations and investigations of stock purchases were not done, and the stock takes were not performed. Control weaknesses then also contributed to losses and possible theft. At the time of our report, there was a theft that was being investigated that happened as a result of the control weaknesses that we noted during our audit. We also reported that PPE was not always procured at market-related prices, and these prices were specified by National Treasury in the instructions that were issued as part of this emergency procurement for PPE. The department also did not adhere to the local content and production threshold requirements when they were procuring 3-ply surgical masks. PPE contracts were also awarded to certain suppliers whose tax matters were not in order. And lastly, there were inadequate controls in the manual stock control processes at the main and regional depots. When the recommendations relating to PPE, we indicated to the accounting officer that they should ensure that all officials in the department are using resources effectively, efficiently, and economically. Ensure that PPE is stored and safeguarded against any possible losses, and establish standard operating procedures for the recording and safekeeping of PPE items. Put measures in place to ensure that PPE items are only procured from suppliers or manufacturers that meet the stipulated percentage for local production and content. And also ensure that awards are made only to bidders whose tax matters are in order at the time of the award. And lastly, to monitor then these payments relating to these awards and ensure that irregular expenditure register is updated and that it is also disclosed appropriately in the financial statement. In the next slide, Chairperson, we also look at, Brian, if you can please move. We also look at the repatriation of South African citizens from one, which was one of the missions that the department was responsible for. We looked at the procurement process for the flight, as well as the recording of the cost in the department's books. We completed our review and we did not identify significant findings for this focus area. In conclusion, the department successfully carried out the mission to repatriate South African citizens from China's Wuhan province. The department helped to enforce law and order by deploying SANDF members. The members also assisted with various activities, including health and humanitarian assistance in the form of COVID-19 awareness, education, scanning and screening, as well as distribution of food parcels and water purification. The minister appointed a task team to further investigate the matter relating to the shortcomings regarding the process for approval, procurement, transportation, and the post-importation procedures for the medical drug Hebron. The department was still procuring support facilities and medical equipment during our review. The accounting officer are committed to address the deficiencies that we picked up around the planning as well as the internal controls deficiencies that I highlighted earlier. Most of the partner spending went to procure PPE, like I indicated in the spending slide. They spent about 850 million on PPE. So most of the spending went to that, and like I indicated, Chair, we did identify some deficiencies and compliance matters during our review of the spending. The department indicated that it will implement the necessary preventative control measures to ensure that in future PPE will be procured and stock will be managed as economically and efficiently as possible. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, AG, Mr. Rollins. Do you want to add anything before I throw the matters open for discussion, Mr. Rollins?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, I think Mbali covered us sufficiently. We will gladly answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, colleagues, the matters are on the table. And let me just look on the screen on my left, see who has raised the hand. All right, I will, this Modise, followed by Mr. Mare, followed by Shelembe, and then Mr. Mukle. Right. I will take your colleagues in that order. Let me repeat it again. I will start with you, Modise, then Mare, then Shelembe, and then the last person is going to be Honorable Mose, unless I get All right. Over to your colleagues in that order. Ms. Modise.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. The AG's report is really worrying, if one has to say. It looks as if there's a lot of loopholes, and I think we really need to take this matter seriously and zoom into it and do a proper oversight over it, particularly a Chairperson on the procurement of the Hebron. Is it called the Hebron? The medicine that has been procured. Firstly, Chair, we need to determine also as a committee what was so urgent regarding the procurement of this medicine. The report sharply points that there was no need assessment that was done to determine the agency of procuring this medicine. The lack of proper demand and needs, I think that's what it says. The fact that procurement processes were also bypassed, it is very worrying members. The fact that also there is no post-importation testing that was done, it simply means also that we procured medicine, it came into our shores. Was it provided? Did it serve the need that it was procured for? And what impact did the medication have on the soldiers, since there is no post testing that was done? It is really worrying. I think there's a lot of issues that one may raise regarding this procurement of medication, including the inadequate planning for this heparin. I want to suggest that maybe as a committee chair, for us to be able to have a full clarity and details on this, I want to suggest that we need to call upon the Surgeon General of the Military Health Services, whom I think must be able to give us clarity on what was the need for this and what was the specific requirements for them to want to procure this medicine. I think the Surgeon General should be called into a meeting, into a committee meeting, and be able to clarify this. And also, I think we need to also call SAFRA. SAFRA needs to come and also give us more details regarding the approval of this medication. I think that's the direction that we need to take. I don't think right now in this meeting we will be able to get all the information that we need. So I want to propose that for this matter, I don't think we'll be able to deal with it adequately in this meeting. We probably need a special meeting for it so that we are able to deal with this matter holistically, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mutise and Honorable Marin.
Thank you very much, Chair. I would just want to start off by supporting the idea from Honorable Mutise. I think there's going to be more than one probably meeting required to interrogate and investigate this and get to the bottom of that. You will recall that I've sent you a formal letter of request and a list of people that and institutions and divisions that I do believe can add value by giving us information or briefing us or testimony or whatever we want to call it. So I really want to support that. And, you know, it's clear from the Auditor General's report, although we have now received it in a very context, in a very, very small summarized version, that it seems like, and maybe this the Auditor General can avail their report to the Secretary of Defense of November to officially, you know, submit that report to us as well. I think many of us have seen that report. We know what the findings is of the Auditor General. And according to that, it seems like there was no legislation whatsoever was complied with in terms of importation. Importation is also a difficult word, because it seems like there was no documentation for the importation of medicine, and it seems like it was misrepresented. It was basically fraudulent transported into South Africa with none of the compliances, even the urgency and the needed protocols to comply with. So maybe the Auditor General, if you can respond by saying, you know, whether we can have that information, because that will certainly assist us in terms of the proposal by Honorable Mutise. I also want to ask the Auditor General, what was their purpose and what is their mandate with this audit that they have done, and specifically with the findings that they have made. Is this for information purposes? Is this going only to hand to the minister or the Secretary of Defense? Clearly, it seems like there was laws being broken. Are they opening a case? Are they charging individuals or some formations? Are they handing it over to the National Prosecuting Authority? Are they referring that to the military ombud, maybe who must look at certain transgressions by staff members? My information is, and I know that we all know basically this information, that it seems like the South African Military Health Services did not support this so-called importation or the transportation of this medicine from Cuba. So there's a lot of answers that we require from various people of how it came about that this in fact happened. And then specifically, I mean, we know about what was in the newspapers lately about, you know, the standoff between the SAPRA and then the military police with regards to the medicine. Obviously, from SAPRA, we need to know what is their jurisdiction and to what extent does the South African Military Health Services have to comply with all of their requirements, also in terms of the storage. Because if it is what the Auditor General is reporting, that at least 40% have been compromised, and it might even be more. If I read in the papers that some people claim that doors were left open and things like that, then it means that we can, and because it's not authorized and because it's not registered, basically everything, all those nearly 970 million vials are wasted. So somewhere along the line, we need to know, and we need to interrogate even National Treasury. What must be done now? Who is taking this further? Or is it up to us as a committee or as individuals, as members of parliament? How do we take this forward? I must know whether there was applications for importation, whether there was documentation for the importation, complied with DTI plus National Treasury and Customs for the importation into Air Force Base Waterkloof. You know, is it true that it was on board a chartered SAA flight where there was no approval being granted for that to be done? Who's responsible for that? Who was responsible for the offloading? There is so many things that we need to get to the bottom of. And the only way that we can do it is in terms of the proposal of Honorable Madise. But as I've said, only one meeting will probably not be enough. This is so urgent, Chairperson. And I'm sure that if National Treasury look at this 260 million rand, they will tell the Department of Defense, sorry, you're not serious about curbing expenses, and you are just wasting more wasteful expenditure. And I'm sure they will not take lightly on this, because nobody can use that medicine. It is a total waste. And even the Chaplain General has come out with a media statement that seems to be that they have got information, because they have apparently been reliably informed of certain things. So even the Chaplain General, we will have to call and say, what is this information that you have got? Share it with us. Where do you get this? You know, what expertise do you have to basically make those judgments? So Chairperson and Secretary of Defense and the Auditor General, if we can get to that, because certain individuals have been a rogue in the process. There's been falsification of documentation and information. And obviously, you know, this is a much more bigger thing, but I need to know from the Auditor General, in whose hands is this now? Is it still in your hands? Are you taking it to the National Prosecuting Authority to lay charges, or is it with us? In terms of the committee of the minister, I know that, I think it was last week or the previous week, that the minister has given notice about the media session where it was expected that she would announce this three-man committee. That has not happened. While I see that the Auditor General say that the minister has in fact appointed this committee, we don't know that. There's no confirmation of that, whether both the Secretary of Defense and the Auditor General can confirm what the Auditor General has said here. Thank you very much. There's so much more things, Chairperson, but I think it will be best that we decide on the way forward and how to deal, get to the bottom of this, and that is why what we must bring in into our program for this quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Shilembe, you're next.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think, I mean, the previous speakers, Honorable Modise and Honorable Marais, has said a lot, and I also want, I mean, to second them that what they are saying is what needs to be done. Chairperson, you know, it's very, very disturbing. That the same department to convince the funds in order to execute its mandate. And they are deliberately doing the wrong things by not, I mean, complying with the protocols as they have done. And you can say now by not understanding that SAPRA was supposed to be part of that to approve, but they didn't, I mean, cognizance of that. And I think, Chairperson, we need to have, I mean, deep discussion in order to enforce, to ensure that at least maybe a possible disciplinary hearing, I mean, takes place, and those who are behind that, I mean, be dealt with accordingly. I think also the minister must come out whether, I mean, she's away, what her position, what in engagement or involvement, anything that happened to be made available sort of information to her before this thing took place. But in short, Chairperson, I would like, I mean, to support, I mean, the other previous speaker that we need, I mean, a very, very deep discussion in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Marais. Sorry, thank you very much, Mr. Shilembe. Mr. Mutle?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Let me firstly welcome this report from the Auditor General, because it is enlightening. I'm saying this because we previously dealt with a report last year that gave us hope that things will be well with the utilization of this COVID resources. But unfortunately, this report is painting a different picture from what we have received last year. So, Chair, I want to, because colleagues have spoken, and it seems like the majority of speakers who spoke before me are in agreement that in terms of COVID-19-related medicine findings and recommendation, we need to call the department to come and give us details as to what transpired. And I want to appeal from them to open up when they come to this committee and give us details that as to what exactly transpired insofar as this matter is concerned, because as a committee of parliament, we cannot rely on newspapers. Because relying on newspapers will be tantamount to relying on ESAs. So I am supporting that view, and I think to call the Surgeon General alone may not do justice. I think the entire Command Council must come, and I hope the General will not give an apology. The four-star general on that day when we called that meeting, because it's necessary for all of them to come and explain or rationalize these decisions that they have taken that has led to these findings. that we find ourselves seated with. And the recommendation. And I think I just want to ask the AG, because out of these findings, you indicate that this interferon was procured without planning, and you further indicate that there was no evidence from SAFRA, but subsequently, so SAFRA did not approve, but subsequent to them procuring, SAFRA then condoned. It seems they condoned and then approved 10 vials, as you indicate in your finding. But have you also checked, because part of what you need to check is whether that 34.86 million that has been paid already, was it budgeted for? Or where did this money come from? Does it come from the 4.2 billion that was allocated to defense? And I mean, for a lack of a better word, I think this matter was handled in an immature manner by those that were responsible to handle this. I'm saying this because on your report, you also say they dealt with one matter that around Field Hospital. I want to believe that it was that project when you are talking about facilities and so forth and so on, where there was a budget of about over 700 million, which the tender was cancelled and reasons were not provided. And it's very worrisome that a tender of that magnitude would be cancelled without valid reasons why it has been done. It leaves us with suspicion, or it will leave the public with suspicion, that probably people had interest and they realized that their interest will not suffice and they frustrated the process in the middle of a pandemic. And we are in the middle of a second wave where these facilities could have been in place to assist the pressure that the health system of our country is having. I mean, it's very worrisome. So I think if you can also explain further on your findings around that, because I don't understand why would they just cancel and tell you and not give you reasons why they did that, unless if reasons are those that cannot be declared on the basis of individual interest. So, lastly, Chair, I think we must give credit where it's due, because towards the conclusion of this report by the AG, it indicates that the department did well in terms of the repatriation project, and credit must be due there. But equally, I'm also worried on PPE that why would a department as big as DOD would do business with people who are not tax compliant? Is it because they do not use CSD? Because when you use suppliers from the CSD system, it will be able to tell you that supplier X is not tax compliant, supplier B is tax compliant, so forth and so on, then you would not even use such a person, because the system automatically tells you that this one is tax compliant, this one is not tax compliant. So it's a bit worrying. Maybe your findings should have explained further, whether you can explain to us as you respond to this, whether that system was used or not. But I suspect it was not used, because if the system was used, then the error will not be with the DOT, will then be an error of the Department of Treasury for not indicating, if it has not indicated on their system that the service providers that the department picked from their system were not tax compliant. So yeah, those are my questions to the AG. And I think we will then take these matters that will need an information or input or responses from the department when we meet the department to discuss these matters that are raised by the AG. Thank you very much.
You may say.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Thabo. Colleagues, we have interacted with this issue. I will now invite the AG just to deal with those that they are relevant to them. And however, I note the following, that there is a proposal on the table that we must call SAMS. In other words, the South African Military Health Services, and in particular the Surgeon General, to come and talk to us and enlighten us about why was this drug in particular agent. And we don't want to talk politics, we don't want to talk military science, we want to talk health, you know, health issues, you know, with him, because he comes from the military, he will also, you know, contextualize it within the environment that they operate. The good thing is that he is in this meeting. So we'll call him to give us that. I'm not calling him now, we'll have a meeting with him at some point. And why was it urgent? And why was this demand? Why so many vials procured all at the same time and not in trenches? And especially that they were not even registered. So we'll talk about the issue of, you know, transporting the vials, the drug, without the necessary registration, because it talks to the agency and the demand. Why so many at that time? And I think you would also address us on the issue of storage as well, not the transportation of the drug, because we hear that the drug transportation also was not compliant with the temperature requirements. Okay, so we'll get information on that as well. And that the drug during transportation was exposed to temperature fluctuations that could actually possibly lend to the drug being unusable, and then the storage again, that there is an issue about the storage, where it is stored. And the Surgeon General, being a doctor and responsible for all medicine pertaining to this division, will also give us protocols, the rules and protocols around the storage of the drug, and whether this one complied with the rules and the protocols around the storage. We are talking to a medical person and the head of our own health system. And then lastly, the administration through stroke dispensing of the medicine, and whether it was competent to be administered and dispensed, and by what authority. So we'll discuss that with him and with the team from the health sector. I hope they are taking note on that. So that's the issue we'll discuss with them. And then there was a proposal that we must also call SAPRA, from what your colleagues are saying, SAPRA. And from SAPRA, we need rules and protocols pertaining the importation of drugs into the importation pertaining the registration and importation of drugs, stroke medicine into the country, and their respective roles in that aspect. So that is SAPRA, and that when there is an issue, and who, like in this case, what is their responsibility? Okay, is their role, functions, and responsibility, and around this this area. And so those are the two agencies that the colleagues have asked us to call. But there is another agency that comes up from the questions that the colleagues have raised, and that deals with the protocols, so not the procurement. I think all colleagues spoke to procurement, the supply chain management, contracting, and so on and so forth. All right, so we'll call the CFO and the chief of logistics to talk to us about this particular area. So those are the people we'll be calling, because they are specialists in that regard, just for us to establish if the laws and the rules pertaining to procurement processes were in fact followed. All right, so that's the team we will call. There was also a proposal that we must call the military command. Okay, I want us to keep that, to keep this one at bay for now, and I'm not ruling it out, and but we need to first understand the rules, protocols, and the responsibilities pertaining to each, player in the chain when it comes to the procurement of this this drug. So that's what I'm basically picking up as what colleagues say we should look into, all in the name of wanting to get full clarity. That's what Modise has proposed into the matter. I am aware that the minister is proposing launching a probe into it, but we're not there yet. We just want to understand the whole things surrounding the drug. So we're talking about the drug at the moment, all right? We're not talking about the PPEs. I think Thabo also spoke to the PPEs. We're also not talking about Yeah, the PPEs. The PPEs, we must find a way of hanging that aspect. I know the matter will come up in the final audit report of the AG. We may perhaps decide that we'll deal with the PPEs when we get to that, because at least the PPEs is not a developing story. The drug is a developing story, because we have a drug that is there that may likely result to a wasteful and fruitless expenditure if the matter is not receiving sufficient attention. The rest is already water under the bridge that will deal with it post ex facto. And then the last point which Thabo raised is to thank the department on the repatriation project. They did an excellent job. And the soldiers, the deployment also did an excellent job. And I think the deployment expired on the 31st of January this year. So we're not foreseeing any further deployment with the relaxation of the restrictions and the fact that the vaccine is being rolled out and so on and so forth. Now, those will be my last concluding remarks after the SG has commented. When the SG comments, not the SG, the AG comments, he must tell us why the department did not report on this interference as part of the COVID-19 expenditure in the list they submitted to the interministerial committee in August. I looked at the list. I did not say this. And okay. Now, AG.
Chairperson?
Yes. No.
If you may indulge me, Chairperson, just for a second, I just wanted to draw your attention that we have the Surgeon General as part of the meeting, and we also have Dr. Mnisi that have interacted with this issue and they have dealt with it over a long period of time from the time it was procured. So I just thought that I needed to mention that. But I do take also the fact that we'll need a fully fledged meeting just to pay attention to this matter, Chair. Thank you.
Yes. No. Thank you so much, SecDef, for that. I am aware. I did mention that I'm aware that they're in the meeting.
Chairperson?
I'm aware that they're in the meeting. That helps us because they are taking notes and of the things that we would want to have to engage with them on. Yes, Mr. Murray.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to check with you whether you will officially consider my letter. And then secondly, I suspect that my suggestion for the Chaplain General to talk to us will be the same time that we will interact with the Military Command Council and the Chief of SNF. I assume that will be your ruling. So that will be fine. And then specifically with regards to the importation protocols, which you have not mentioned, is the National Treasury, specifically customs, you know, the procedure with regards to customs and how this should have been done. And then obviously the Department of Trade and Industry or Economic Development and Industry in terms of you know, applications for import permits. So because this will all give us the background and the procedural and those processes, I assume that your ruling will be that that all those others in terms of the defense and the Military Command Council and the Chaplain General, they need to then report to us at a different session. I've got no problem with that principle. And then obviously in terms of the Auditor General's report in November, that's probably why they haven't mentioned it in August, because their report is only dated November. With those findings, and which was the, let's call it, the first step of everything that has been disclosed and unraveled. So if you can just respond to those, I'll appreciate that very, very much.
Yes. No, thank you so much, Mr. Murray. Just to address you on the two other agencies that you are referring, SARS and Trade and Industry, I did not talk about those because there is nowhere in the report of the Auditor General where they are implicated. So not the Auditor General, where they are implicated or mentioned. And I thought we should confine ourselves to the agencies that are in a way implicated in the AG's report for now. But if during the interaction with the agencies that we have mentioned, it comes up that we need to touch base with other agencies, we will, of course, look at that. We're not shutting the door to any agency that may be invited at a later date. I want us, when we invite an agency, we are clear what is it that we want to get from our interaction with them, all right? That we cannot get when we are dealing with matters within the conference that have framed. Yeah, are you happy with me? We're not closing the door to those two and any agents.
Yeah, and I have no problem. Although I, you know, in the report of November, you know, in terms of the findings, they are clearly implicated because they are the controlling bodies, and in terms of importation. And if they say there's nothing has been completed, and it seems like, you know, I don't want to call the word fraudulent, but you know, if other documents in it, if it has been declared something totally different, then obviously it certainly implicates them because it's their requirements and procedures. But I will abide by your ruling at least that we don't you know, shut them out and that we can call them if necessary. Thank you.
No, it's fine. And I will also listen to the AG's reply as well, just to check if we still left. We need to extend the invite to other bodies. AG, I'm now inviting you to make a comment.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for those questions. I'll start off, and then at the end, I will ask Krishna just to provide the committee then with a bit more details around the approval of SAPRA and the shortcomings that we've identified with regard to the planning for the procurement of the Hebron drug. Chairperson, you asked a question about why was the information about this procurement of the Hebron drug not included in the interministerial report. We can unfortunately not comment on that because, I think that's most probably a question that the committee should rather ask the department or the minister, because we are not a party to what is the contents of that report. There is a detailed report which the Auditor General has tabled on all the proactive audit work that we've done on this COVID-19. And the chapter that deals with the procurement from the Department of Defense starts on page 153 of that report. We have made it available to the committee secretary, but we can make it available again. That report gives all the detail of the audit findings. It even includes the management comments and then also the recommendations that we have discussed with the committee today. So it's quite detailed. It's not in the normal format that we normally report. So that can give committee members valuable additional information, you know, but that was not maybe specifically included in the presentation today. We did this audit on request of the president, and we did it in terms of our normal audit mandate. So therefore, we reported, that report is tabled in Parliament, was tabled in Parliament in December, and therefore we report now to this committee as oversight and for this committee to consider any further actions. We do not report any cases to the police. We also did not request the military ombudsman to do an investigation. It is up to him to decide whether he wants to do any further investigation. What is important to note is that, and it was covered in one of in our slide that dealt with the Hebron procurement, and it was the first point, is that we did not get all the information and documentation that we requested from the department. And that actually then places a limitation on the scope of the audit. So we could only report on the basis of the information that we have actually received. So there's also for us a lot of information that we would have wanted to have during the audit process, but which was not given to us, despite the requirement of Section 15 of the Public Audit Act that determines that all information that the Auditor General requests should be made available. The Fusion Center has full access to us, to our report as well, in case they want to take any further action. We did this then in the format of an interim audit, and with the difference that we then reported formally to Parliament, whereas we would normally not do with interim audits. So the audit will continue, and we will report whatever we need to report then in the final audit report that will be issued on the 2021 financial year. I want to also clarify, Chairperson, in the detailed report, we did report that we had a draft terms of reference from the minister in terms of the investigation that the minister wanted to conduct. So at that point in time, it was a draft document. There was a question about the 34.6 million rands. Yes, it's part of the 4.3 billion rands. And in that slide that Tumbali dealt with, where it was the budget and the actual expenditure, it is that item where there's the asterisk, which actually then explains to say, well, there's a 4.6 million rands expenditure against this 64 million plus budget. But this is not complete because there's a 34.6 million rands that were actually misallocated and should still have also been included in there. So there was a budget for medicine, and that is covered in that slide. It's also covered in the special report. On the question with regard to the procurement to the value of 785 million rands, which we reported that the procurement process was actually stopped and not concluded, as Bali indicated, we felt it was important to put this in the final report, even though the procurement has been stopped, because there were a number of key controls that were not in place. Or not adhered to when that procurement took place. So in the detailed report, we give a bit more detail around that. But in summary, the department had interaction with a supplier prior to determining the specifications and inviting other suppliers to tender. That company that the interaction took place with was at that point in time only in existence for 2 months. And that raises the question, how did it come about that the department would already be engaging with a company in the medical field, which is only recently been established? Furthermore, the department gave only 48 hours for potential tenderers to submit their tenders, and the normal period is 21 days. And then there was only one company that could submit a tender within the 48 hours, and that was the company with which the departmental officials had discussions before the specifications was compiled. That therefore gave that company a unreasonable advantage And would that procurement transaction have been completed, it would have resulted also in irregular expenditure. And that's why we also recommend that those officials involved in that transaction should be investigated and appropriate consequence management and should take place. Chairperson, I just also want to clarify with regard to the CSD and VAT. The National Treasury has got a directive which actually clearly states that even though there is the central supplier database, whenever a department wants to do procurement with any entity listed there, it is the responsibility of the department to again ask for a tax clearance certificate. Tax clearance certificates got expiry dates, and therefore it will be very difficult for National Treasury to keep on following up with all the thousands of suppliers whether their tax clearance status is still in order. Therefore, it's the responsibility of the department to make sure that when they invite entities to tender or quote, that they make sure that the tax matters are in order at that specific point in time. We also give a bit more detail in the detailed audit report. What happened in some of the instances is that the tax matters were not in order. The department was aware of it. They allowed the entities an additional 7 days to provide the tax clearance certificates. And that is allowed in terms of the Treasury directives. However, in some cases, the department allowed 14 days for these entities to provide the relevant tax clearance certificates. I will hand over to Krishna just to give you a bit more details then about the planning around the Hebron procurement and explain to you how does the SAPRA approval process work and specifically in this context? Thank you. I'm going to hand over to...
Thank you so much, Mr. Lawrence. Thank you so much, Mr. Lawrence. Who are you calling to add is on the... to talk?
It's Ms. Krista Janssen van Rensburg.
Okay, that's fine. Janssen van Rensburg?
Good afternoon, Chairperson and honorable members. Thank you for the opportunity just to provide a little bit of more feedback and clarity in terms of the planning processes and the approval processes. In terms of the planning process, SAMS did submit to us a guideline on the clinical management COVID-19 disease, which they use to inform their planning and procurement of any drugs or any medicine that they need for COVID. So in this guideline, there was a list of the different medicines included, but the numbers were not included. And that is why we indicated that we have a problem with the planning, because it's giving us a list, and included in this list was the active ingredient interferon, but getting to the quantity of specific medicine items were not documented and not submitted to us. On how did they calculate the 970,000. Then in terms of the approval from SAPRA, you can apply for 3 types of approval from SAPRA. The one is a clinical trial application, and then the second one is Section 21 approvals that you apply for, and there's 2 different ones. The one is specifically for a named patient, and the other one is for bulk stock applications. Now, during our audit, we found the reauthorization from SAPRA that was issued on the 5th of October, despite some of the medicine already arriving at the depot on 27 April 2020. The reauthorization is also quite clear in terms of if the original authorization is not attached to this reauthorization, it is not valid. But we couldn't get that original authorization from the department. Then that specific Section 21 approval was given to the department approval.
Sorry, Ms. Van Janssen van Rensburg, you are saying the department did not give you that original authorization. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, okay. So it means that it's fine. So I'm sure the Surgeon General is taking note of that.
Thank you, Chair. Then the Section 21 approval that was given by SAPRA on the 5th of October was for one specific patient only. So it was only approving the use of 10 vials. Then the department also did apply for a bulk stock application during October, but on the 21st of October, this was denied by SAPRA. So by the time that we compiled this report and went for tabling, the only approval that was confirmed within the DOD for Heberon was for the 10 vials for a patient-specific Section 21 approval. I hope that provides more clarity. Thank you, Jay.
It does. It does. Though it raises more questions than answers, not on your side, but on the side of the department.
I agree with you, Chair.
And they're taking note of it. And any.
Honorable Chair,
you're muted.
Honorable Chair.
Sorry, Mr. Lawrence. Okay, thanks. Mr. Lawrence, are you done?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson.
You are done.
Thank you very much.
Okay, no, it's fine. Right. Colleagues, I think that we've concluded on the matter.
Honorable Chair.
And yes, General?
Yes. Honorable Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, you're quite right. Thank you very much.
My apologies, SJ, I did not recognize you. Over to you.
Yeah, no. Yes, thank you very much. You have spot on. I've been in the meeting right from the beginning. And like you correctly said, I've been taking notes in respect of everything that has been said here. I, however, would like to say that there are a lot of inaccuracies and deficiencies in the report itself. And therefore, I am very grateful about the fact that the committee has selected to let us have a hearing and a bite at this, so that at least we clarify certain issues which are being sort of which have been hanging out there in the air and also in the media. I think it's the duty of this committee to know exactly what is it that has happened and is going to happen in respect of this drug Heberon. So I just wanted to make a note of the fact that there are some inaccuracies that exist in the report. But because you have already ruled, that's great. We will have our time to come and explain to the committee. I thank you.
No, thank you so much. We will look at that matter when you are officially behind, before the committee to engage with us on this matter. And so I want to leave it at that for now. Colleagues, I hope I closed the matter on the right, on the note that is mandated by the discussion. Is there anything that I'm leaving out? I've already summarized the way forward on the matter. Okay? Colleagues, are we still together? Yes, Mr. Mutler.
Yes, except to say what the SG has raised, he must also raise it with the AG, so that we as the committee accept this report from the AG as factual of findings that the AG has found. And if there is anything that they are not happy about and the discrepancies, they must raise it with the AG so that it's addressed at that level.
Okay.
Yes, I think I'm sure you heard that. Did you hear that, SJ? I think what Mr. Motla is saying, to paraphrase it, is that you have identified some inaccuracies in the report, right? And the AG says there's been a limitation of scope because the information that for non-submission of information, right? And so can you do two things before we meet with you? That all the information, the SECDEF is in the meeting, all right? That if the non-submission of the information is within your area of responsibility, SJ, please submit that report to the SECDEF, who for onward transmission to the AG, so that they come back with a complete report on the areas that they've actually identified that they could not conclude on because of the non-submission. That's one area, and including the one that I've actually made note in particular, that there was this original authorization that was requested, but for some reasons was never forwarded to AG, all right? And two, when it on the inaccuracies that you are actually identifying, submit those inaccuracies via the SECDEF to the AG. I want the AG to comment. I want the AG's office to comment on those on what you are alleging as inaccuracies in the report, so that we don't have a ding-dong. I'm not too sure if it's the right term to use. If it's not the right term to use, you'll pardon me. In the meeting where there is a fight and on whether this is correct and this is not correct, what must be presented before us is factual report. The office of the AG so far has been doing a sterling job on coming to us with matters factual. In most cases, since my entire life in the service, are the departments that have been found wanting. And the one for not giving evidence for the information they're advancing, backup evidence for the information they're advancing, two on non-submission, three on wanting to confuse the AG and the team. But we are saying here in this one, there are inaccuracies. We want those inaccuracies addressed and in a comment that the AG must provide to us. But it's two way. It's you submitting the information that is required, so that they have the address the limitation of scope, and two, this information that points out to the inaccuracies that you have actually mentioned. Thabo, am I summarizing your suggestion very well? Thabo?
Yes, Chair.
I've summarized your suggestion. Okay. Given this, is 2 weeks sufficient for you to, number one, draft a document that spells out the inaccuracies, two, to assist, facilitate the submission of the information that the AG required, as that which is within your functional responsibility. SG? Is 2 weeks sufficient a time for us to, for you to come back to us on the matters, given that we are asking you to do these two things?
Yeah, I think 2 weeks is fine for me, Chair. And I think, again, let me just correct something. If the inaccuracies are not per se out of the report of the AG, but in some of the discussions by the members. So essentially, that is it. It's not really as per se to the report of the AG. It's the discussions around the table by the members. Oh, but 2 weeks is fine. 2 weeks is fine.
No. No. That's fine. Those will be cleared in our discussion with you. Where we will give you, in other words, when you are given time to give us this your side of the story. No, that don't worry about that. But on this other non-submission, do you commit SG?
Yes, I commit, Chair. I commit.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You finish. Yeah, colleagues. I think that takes. Yes, sir.
I think in an attempt of the SG to try and confuse the AG, now he's confusing himself.
Yes. Are you done, Thabo?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. No, it's fine. All right. Okay. No, colleagues, thank you very much. SecDef, and you have been quiet. I want to release you now. And just a few words before you part. We've concluded on these matters.
No, thank you very much.
We've concluded on the first matter.
Yes.
Yes, you may go ahead.
I just wanted to say that on all the three issues, whether it's the audit plan, we'll do as the comments that came from the committee, we'll tighten it up, we'll give you the time frames in terms of our action plan, and then the HR plan will also proceed in the manner agreed. And then we have noted all the questions that have been raised by the honourable members and in relation to the report of the AG on the COVID-19. So what we will do is to respond to all those questions and try to be as comprehensive as possible. And I think that we will then agree on the time frame, or we will move from the premise that we agree on the 2 weeks period.
Thank you so much, AG. You have not disappointed us since we started working. And but please note that what Thabo said, he said the report is enlightening. I say the report is a shocker. The AG's report is a shocker. But we discuss that when we meet again. So with that, colleagues, I wish to thank the departmental officials. You are now released. I wish to thank the AG's office. You are now released. And any other person who is not a committee member is excused. I need just 10 to 20 minutes until 2 o'clock to clear out the minutes and the program for the committee. Agreed, colleagues? Agreed. Thank you so much. Right, Brian, can we look at the minutes, the first set of the minutes?
Correct.
Right, colleagues, this was the this is the meeting of the 17th of October, 2020. And on the agenda, it was the consideration and adoption of the draft preliminary 2019 budget review and recommendations on the DOD, DMV, CCB, and AMSCO. And this was the attendance as recorded. You may move down. Attendance right through. And colleagues, these are the observations, colleagues. And are there any, of course, these observations found way into the report, which we approved. Colleagues, are there anything that, any corrections you want to make on this item number four?
No, sir, the minutes is fine. I'll propose.
Propose mover, right, go to the end. Anything, number five, number, right, go down. No, no, go up. Right, no, opposite direction, right. Continue to the end. All right. Mr. Maria moves. Any seconder?
I second, Chair.
And Ms. Baker seconds. Thank you so much, colleagues. Let's go to the second set. So 21st of October, on the agenda, it was the briefing by DMV on its organizational structure, HR plan, skills audit, and two feedback by DMV and appeal board on the functioning of the appeal board and the setting of annual target performance targets of entities reporting to it, and the reporting by DMV on the finalization and of the amendments of the Military Veterans Act and regulations. All right, this is the attendance register. All right, go down. Thank you so much. This was the introduction. We can pass. Apologies, we can pass. And the briefing by the department, item number four, we can pass. And I think we can pass. That's briefing. Deliberations by the committee, all right? And okay, you can pass. And briefing by DMV on its structure, HR plan and skills audit, you can pass. Yes, continue. Pass. And the feedback by DMV and the appeal board on the functioning of the appeal board and the setting of annual targets of entities. And then reporting by DMV on the finalization of amendment of the Military Veterans Act. And number eight, resolutions and actions of the committee, and then the closing remarks. Colleagues, have you identified any correction? Can I take this as a true reflection? Hello? Hello, colleagues.
The true reflection, sir.
True reflection. I did not hear who this is.
That's Mafanya.
Oh, Mafanya. Hey, Mafanya.
Yeah.
Guys. And any second?
Seconded, Chair.
Seconded by Tabo. Thank you so much. And that was the Brian. This was the last set for now, eh?
That is correct, sir.
Let's go to the program of the committee, as it of course will be amended by our discussion today. Colleagues, what we are doing on this, we are mainly picking up matters arising, so that we were able to follow through and on all the issues. And so just look at that. Today we are considering and adopting this 2021 report. So we've dealt with the item with the third, right? Let's go to the 10th. The 10th is the briefing by the Advisory Council on Military Veterans on its report for the term. By law, they are meant to report to Parliament. They report to the Minister, who must then table their annual report on their activities. And that has not been happening for the past 5 years. I don't know when were they established, but at least I'm talking about this one. It's 5 year term, it never did that. So, and now the term has expired. And I'm not too sure if they are still willing to make to present to us without, at their cost, without costing the department for coming to us. If they are willing, we'll accept that. If they want to do it at cost
of course, we will then expect the department to do it. But it would have been proper. It would have been. Hello? Hello?
No, we can hear you, Chair.
Okay, it would be proper to hear it from the horse's mouth. But if that cannot happen, the department will do it on their behalf. And then two, the consideration and adoption of the PC depends on the honest visit to the borderlines, right? That report is before your colleagues, and we will come up on the 10th for adoption, and then we must deal with the minutes. And then on the 17th, is the briefing by DMV on their database.
Can I just ask, we're going through this program that we have seen, but where are we going to fit in all these hearings and interactions with that we have just decided on and resolved? Because obviously they must be, in my opinion, prioritized. So somewhere in February, we will have to start fitting them in. Otherwise, we're running out of time. And these are so relevant and today and challenges that we cannot wait for the second quarter to deal with that. So we have to do this. And you've just asked the Auditor General and the other party Surgeon General whether they can respond in 2 weeks. So I thought that the 2 weeks was the indication of when we can start to have those hearings.
Yes, Mr. Mare, can we adopt this subject to these 2 weeks, to these 2 weeks, this other appointment?
Okay.
So we adopt this subject to fitting in the meeting with the structures that we've identified. Yes, sir, Mr. Shalembe?
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Muka?
Yeah, I thought you were just going through this and then we'll interact and move a certain item somewhere. Because the 2 weeks tells me that we will not meet the DMV on the 17th. Then we must move the program. We must then rearrange the program because the 2 weeks affirms that on the 17th we will be dealing with the issues that we have resolved on today.
Okay.
Therefore, on the 17th we can't deal with DMV and we must. So, and we can't club them with any other item because we want to get more details into that matter.
Colleagues, I think I hear you. Let's accept this subject to moving some items to later to give way for this meeting on the park. Agreed?
I support that.
We support that. Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Okay. So in other words, we'll then come back and present a final plan when we meet next. All right?
Yeah.
A final program. Okay. Yeah. So, but we'll go with this for now. All right. Okay. Are you happy with this? I'm not disrupting you.
That's correct, sir.
Yes. Okay. So in other words, we accept this one in principle, subject to us amending it to incorporate the meetings that we have proposed today, and then with the other matters, especially on DMV, being pushed possibly into the next squad. All right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So thank you so much. Brian, thank you so much. Have you not concluded, Brian?
Okay.
Yes, we have, sir.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay. Colleagues, thank you very much for your time. I'm sorry that you worked beyond 1 o'clock. It's now 5 to 2. I invite you to lunch.
Thank you very much. That's very kind of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, colleagues.
next time when we're in KZN doing oversight, we will have that lunch with you.
Oh, sorry, remind me. Okay, no, it's fine. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Okay, great.